It's day one of OTAs as the Buffalo Bills continue their offseason program.
We're going to catch up with the player after today's workout, and we'll have notes from the league owners' meetings in Atlanta, Georgia.
Also, he wrote his final Monday morning quarterback article yesterday. Peter King joins us at 2.
And we want to hear from you. Who will be the Bills' MVP in 2018? Let us know on the telephone line and on Twitter. One Bills Live starts right now.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker.
Into the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown.
And he's got it at the 10-yard line.
Touchdown. Touchdown. Touchdown, Buffalo. The Bills win it in overtime.
That means we're here. That means One Bills Live is here on the air, live from Orchard Park. We're right next door to New Era Field, where it's pouring rain, and it has been all morning here in OP. But we're inside, warm and dry. We're in the Ed Pro Sports Training Center in our One Buffalo studio. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, welcome to the show. 3 hours of Bills talk, NFL talk coming up here.
Yeah.
John Murphy, alongside my partner, Steve User Error Tasker.
That's right. Not and starting all day. We usually do our little cold open, that little thing that you radio listeners hear where we kind of go over what's going to happen on the show and when Bills Live starts. Now, it's on TV, and we usually shoot that in, like, outside or on the field,
in the field house.
Well, they're practicing on the field in the field house, and outside it's pouring rain, so we're in a corner tucked away in an office right in Murph's cubicle.
Looked awful.
It looked horrible. But, you know, it's
felt good.
It's a radio show, so we...
It is a radio show,
we have
so
perfect,
you don't care what
I have a face for radio, too, by the way. But you're right. I am. My new nickname for today's show is User Error, because we had... when you come in to get ready for the show, you know, we're printing stuff out, kind of reading articles, getting ready for the day's news, and...
It's hard work.
Right. Watching sports, talking about sports, reading about sports, making sure you're up on all the, you know, the latest stuff, and you're reading a lot of articles, and you're printing it. Like, I read this here, read this, and you print it. Well, today, my printer wouldn't work. And a little bit of a panic, because, you know.
You panicked.
Yeah.
You were gripping.
So I was calling people in the building, trying to get somebody to help me. So they came down, and come to find out, it was user error.
Here's the issue, and this is what got us. Our producer, Jay Harris, was on the phone with the IT, with Crystal in IT. She's great. She's on the exact opposite side of the building. Crystal says, yeah, I'll come down.
Yeah, this
Jay
is a
hangs
big building.
Up. Steve, I don't know if you weren't paying attention. You picked up the phone and called Crystal back again. Said, Crystal, can you come down and look at my printer?
I wondered why she sounded disgusted.
Because she just got done talking to Jay about the exact same issue.
See, I didn't realize that.
But she came down, fixed you up, and Steve said, was that user error? And Crystal said...
She was nice about it. She goes, well, it was. And she started explaining it. So I go, so it was user error. And she goes, well, yeah. She was trying to be nice about it.
Thank you, Crystal.
Yeah.
And I promise I'll keep Steve away from you. You can't treat those people like that.
I was ready to throw that printer right out the window.
It works now.
If we had one. If we had a window in our office, I would have thrown the printer out of it.
We're all set. Listen, our little issues are meaningless, because right outside our office and right on the other side of the wall over there, it's practiced. Even looks and sounds and feels like practice. We didn't really watch much. We were able to walk through. It's day one of OTAs. But I was kind of stunned at how intense it was and how business-like it was. It looks like a regular season practice.
You talk about – we've been out here, you know, they've been jumping over hurdles and doing this, you know, the ladder, rope ladder drills, and they've been running back and forth, stretch, and doing all these exercises and playing dodgeball for team building and stuff. So today is day one of OTAs. You come out – man, they got helmets on and jerseys. They're looking – and they're like – and it's like a light switch hit, man. It is serious. I was stunned. Not stunned, but shocked.
I was.
By the change in demeanor on the field. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, and the pace is different than everything they've done to date. Now, they've been here since, what, April 19th?
Yeah, they've been here a month.
April 19th, I think. That's more than a month. They've been here working out with different phases of OTAs, team workouts, on-field team workouts. But
OTAs,
this was different today. Today was day one of OTAs. You got three sessions of OTAs this week, three more next week, three more the week after that, and then you get to mandatory minicamp. But this was real. This was serious today.
Yeah.
I mean, special teams work, offense versus defense, that's primarily what makes it look like real football, right? You have offense versus defense on the
field.
Well,
in the lead up to this, they did have footballs out there, and they were, you know, they'd throw them around, they were lying, walking around, doing stuff. But I'm telling you, today they're playing football. I mean, they're like looking out,
touch
they're
football.
Running, they're breaking on the ball. They're, you know, it was pretty cool to see. I mean, all of a sudden, and you kind of get a little, you know, they put their helmets on. It makes everybody about 2 inches taller. And all of a sudden, you get a sense of how big and athletic they are. I didn't expect that. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
It caught me off guard.
We
walked out there, and it was like, wow,
this is real.
It was a different day.
Up-tempo, too. I mean, from drill to drill, there was no downtime. They were They blow the whistle. They go to the next drill, the next drill, the next drill. And, again, it would look like practice last year, and that's the tempo they had at practice last year, but we haven't seen it. I haven't seen it since last, you know, the week before the playoff game. And to see it again today, first day of OTAs, it was an eye-opener.
And here's the thing, too. It's all scheduled. Like, they schedule every practice. But one of the things that's wild about it is now the practice inside the practice is, well, listen, we got to get some stuff done now. It's not like we're going over here to play tug-of-war anymore. Now we got a new game. We're going to teach you real quick. No, they're, like, snapping to another drill. And these guys, and they kind of know what they're doing, too. The players kind of line up and get ready. And they're, you know, and they're breaking down in a football stance when the ball snapped. It's just such a difference, and also the structure of the whole thing, because it is pretty regimented as to what they can do, what they can't do, how long they can have these guys on the field, and what they're allowed to do. So they maximize all of that, and that means everything's done kind of at full speed, even between the drills. And that's all of a sudden it turned into an NFL event.
Yeah, you know? I mean, OTAs began today on Thursday, 2 days away. Thursday, the players and coaches, Sean McDermott, will meet with the media and talk a little bit about what they've done. And at that point, we'll bring you some of the highlights from OTAs, whatever we can get, and show you on the air on the television side. In the meantime, we can talk about anything. And the phone lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. I have a feeling that I was inspired by the pace of practice today in trying to come up with this topic for the day. It's not a Twitter poll, but it's a Twitter topic and a
Twitter quiz.
A Twitter quiz, yeah, I like that. And it was because, you know, you see that practice and you're like, wow, we're playing football here. And we're looking ahead, 2018. Want to know from you, simple question. No Twitter poll, just ring us up or shoot a tweet in. Who will be the Bills MVP in 2018 and why? Give us a call. Lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Who do you think, offense, defense? Who will be the Bills MVP in 2018 and why? Coming up when practice ends, we'll get a player in here. We have three options for players. We'll wait until we find out which one it is before you tell you who it is. And coming up at 2 o'clock, a guy you just got off the phone with, Peter King, who we talked about at length yesterday. Peter King, who has wrapped up his tenure at Sports Illustrated, SI.com, and MMQB, getting set to start in July with NBC and various projects. And we're going to talk live with Peter King at 2 o'clock today about his future, what he's done so far, what he's going to do in the future, and, of course, about the NFL. When he was quizzing you about special teams issues, I think.
Yeah, right? he's talking about the kickoff meetings, and he's obviously – I didn't ask him, but I take it for granted that he's down at the owners' meetings in Atlanta with the rest of the national media hoarding around, you know, circling that place like vultures. But we've been told by people in and around the league that the only thing they're going to do today is vote on and rubber stamp the change of possession of the Carolina Panthers. David Tepper will probably be voted in and approved as being the guy to buy that franchise. That's probably the only thing on the agenda for today. You know that we've talked to you at length in the past couple of days about there are other things on the agenda, the gambling, the anthem protests, and the kickoff thing. And the kickoff special teams thing is what Peter King and I were talking about on the phone just 10 or 15 minutes before we came on the air. Nobody really knows what it's going to look like. It is going to look a little differently. For most fans, particularly the casual fan, it'll look a little different because the kicking team will go from a standing start rather than a running start. And that will be basically the only thing that people will notice a lot of as a change. And, of course, they'll notice there'll be only three guys deep, way deep in the field. But we have yet to see what it'll mean, whether it'll be more return. I've heard some of the special teams coaches think there's going to be more returns as opposed to less returns. Because
is that what they want? I don't think so.
Well, they don't care if there's more returns or less returns. What they care about is there's going to be fewer concussions and fewer injuries on the play, which is what the alignment and all the stuff they're doing other than that is going to bring about. And I think it's going to be right down those lines. I think there's going to be some guys bringing that ball out of the end zone deep, because I think return, if you don't kick it deep, I think the returns are going to become a much bigger part of the NFL than they have been in the past because of the coverage team's inability to get a running start.
Why wouldn't you kick it deep?
Well, I think you will.
You will. You'll try.
But I think here's the thing. I think you're not only going to kick it deep, but I think returns are going to be so much easier to have a good return is going to be easier to give. You're going to have a team that if they return it, they're going to be able to get out past the 25 a lot more often if the ball's not deep. I think you're going to have guys bringing the ball out 4 yards deep, 5 yards deep. In the past, when they finally switched and brought the and started kicking it deep, they had guys bringing out 6 or 7 yards deep for a while until the special teams coaches said, don't do that anymore, particularly when they moved the touchback line out to the 25.
Yeah.
But now I think you're going to have guys returning it again. When they're 5 yards deep, they're going to start bringing it out because they'll have a chance to get it out past the 25 and, of course, maybe that chance of rolling the dice and going the whole way. So I think you're going to see a lot more returns, but you're going to see fewer injuries on those returns, so which Peter, is what the league wants.
Peter King called you up and quizzed you about some of this. Is it weird you're going to be asking him questions in about 2 hours?
Yeah, we can't. Yeah. Yeah. But
right? It's a little weird.
Yeah, a little bit. But listen, Pete, he's one of the all-time great guys. He's been doing it forever. He's doing it since I was in the league 29 years. And I've been a part of the league for like 31 or 32 years, you know. And so he started at SI just shortly after the start of my career. And so it's, we're kind of contemporary.
Did you thank him for naming you the most decent, great player he's ever covered?
I did not. I figured I'd wait till he could get on the air. And he could let him.
I think that's a compliment. It's the most decent. It's not a backhanded or left-handed compliment, but it's not like you said you're the greatest guy he's ever met either.
I welcome him, I'm going to say, welcome to the show, Peter King, the most decent, great writer I've ever been a part of.
It's decent. You're decent. You're great.
Decent. No, he meant I'm a decent human being, not a different decent player. He called me a great player, which was
right.
In and of itself.
But a decent
very
human being. But it's different than somebody saying, you are the best. It's like saying, you're better than average. You're decent. It's just a weird compliment.
He said I was the most decent.
Most decent.
So not just decent.
On the degree of decency, Steve is number one. Anyway, Peter King's with us. The Legion of Decency.
I love it, though.
Peter is with us live at 2 today. We'd love to hear from you on our topic of the day. It's pretty simple. Who will be the Bills MVP in 2018? Who do you got? I've thought about it a little bit. I've thought about it. I think I'm going to go with the defense, Steve, and I think I'm going with a rookie middle linebacker, Tremaine Edmonds, as the Bills' most valuable player this season. And I'm not saying it'll be an easy path to MVP, but I think he has he's going to be on the field all the time, which is why I think he'll be the MVP. I mean, he will stay there. He can get into pass coverage as well. They drafted him first round, right in the middle of the first round. They love him. A lot of people love him. A lot of other teams had him in their eyesight. And I just think he has the ability to be in on a lot of plays, make a lot of big plays, tremendous athleticism, maybe come up with some picks and some fumble strips and recoveries. And I'm not saying this is a lock, but I don't think there is a lock. Easy to go to Shady as the MVP for the Bills this year, but I'm going with Edmonds, the rookie
linebacker.
Yeah,
and if you look at the offensive side of the ball, Shady's kind of the only guy that stands out because there's so many unknowns about A.J. McCarron and whether he's going to start all 16 games or just 6 games or 6 quarters or 12 games or whatever. Josh Allen, is he going to win the job in the preseason? Is he going to be the MVP and come out and play and have a kind of year that only you dream about as a rookie quarterback in the NFL? Is it going to be Charles Clay, somebody who benefits from having a steadier hand or a more efficient passing game, who's going to come out and catch 67 balls from the tight end spot or 77 balls from the tight end spot and score 9-10 touchdowns as a tight end in the NFL, and he becomes the MVP? Is it going to be Kelvin Benjamin or some of those guys that benefit from the fact that the Bills are probably going to be more efficient in the passing game? But I think it's easy to say all that, but I think really it's easier to point to the defensive side of the football and say they're more established, they were more competitive last year. And you look at Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer. Micah Hyde could have made a case for being the defensive MVP a year ago. But then Tre'Davious White could come in and have a kind of year that a guy like one of those lockdown corners, like Deion Sanders has had in the past, or one of those guys. He could become one of those great corners in the league that people talk about. So there's a lot of possibilities for this, particularly since you take the quarterback for me. You take that off the table as an MVP type of spot now, because in my mind, I think there are going to be two guys that are taking snaps. I think Josh Allen's going to take some, but I don't think he'll start the season. A.J. McCarron could take it, and if he plays well, or if the team's winning and the defense keeps him in games and A.J. plays well, he's not coming off that field. And he could very well turn into the MVP. So for me, thinking about it like that, I'm looking at a guy like Micah Hyde, as MVP.
Really?
Just because of he's because of the turnovers they generated last year. If they do that again, I think you point to the secondaries being the strength of the team the way it is, and I think you point to the guy who quarterbacks the secondary, and I think it points straight to Micah Hyde.
All right. Want to hear from you. Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. The Bills MVP in 2018. It's early, very early, I know that. But what do you think? Who do you think it'll be? Give us a call. We'll talk about that. Read some of your tweets in a moment. Here's a tweet that we should deal with, though, Steve, because it is a bit of a news item. The news came out yesterday about 4 o'clock that the Bills have moved on from Richie Incognito. He was released from the reserve retired list. The team announced yesterday, so Incognito is an immediate free agent. A tweet from Tony DeChristopher. Are you guys going to talk about the Richie situation? Do you think he'll sign with someone else? Why did things go so wrong with him after everything this team has done for him? Yeah, I think he will sign with someone else. I think he has a little bit to offer. The whole situation, obviously, was odd. And what's most odd was, I think, Richie's reaction. You know, he signed the new contract, obviously took a pay cut. Okay, that's been documented. And then retired, talking about, what, stress and
well, he said his kidneys and his liver were shutting down because of all the nutritional things that he did or whatever it is he put into his body.
My liver and kidneys are shutting down. The stress is killing me.
Right. So,
and then he wants to play again.
Yeah.
It's strange.
It is strange. And the Bills, I think, to their credit, and this is kind of their mantra, listen, obviously it became a point where they couldn't vacillate. So him retiring, well, they got to move on from him.
Yeah.
And once you move on, you know, there's no going back. And I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, that speaks to the culture. That speaks to the tradition of the NFL. It also speaks to where their roster's at right now. They got some guys that they've poured a little bit into, let alone a guy like Wyatt Teller, who they drafted, and a young guy who's more physically fit, just as big and strong, and who just needs to get a little experience and who fits into the culture. There's no reason to take a step backward.
Right. Richie's 34, and comparing like a Wyatt Teller, even a John Miller, you're looking at, you know, Richie's
early 20s.
Inconsistent, too. His,
right.
You know, his demeanor is inconsistent. Look, and I've said this for years, the 3 years he was here, I thought it was one of the great comeback stories in recent NFL history, where he was and how he came back, the opportunity he was given by Rex Ryan and the Pegulas and the Bills to come back and reclaim his career. He did that. It was a great story. He went to Pro Bowls. He was playing pretty well. Went to the Pro Bowl even when maybe, you know, it was not warranted, I would say, even at times last year, for example. But I don't know. The question is asked, why did things go wrong with him, so wrong with him after everything the team's done for him? Well,
it didn't go wrong. It just ended.
It ended. He's 34 years old.
Yeah, he retired, yeah. And he was having some physical problems as a result of that. And I don't, you know, the Bills are probably saying, you know what if they do pour their efforts back into getting Richie Incognito back on the field? How confident are they that he's going to be able to play 16 games, given what he has said and what has happened in this last offseason? Guys of that vintage in the NFL, 35 years old, don't bounce back like they did. That's one of the reasons they end their careers. So, and that's what Richie was feeling at the end of this last season and during this last offseason. So, you know, I don't think there's any question the Bills feel good about going forward without him, particularly since they've had 3 months to do so and to move forward.
Yeah. Richie's behavior and his statement and his retirement accelerated, right, what they were going to do anyway.
Right.
Probably a year ahead of schedule, they decided to part ways with Richie. I think they planned on having him here. They obviously negotiated a redone contract with him. But once he talked about retirement, talked about the stress and his liver and kidneys shutting down, I think they figured, let's do it now. Let's move on now. And it's unfortunate, but it was a good 3 years for Richie Incognito. I enjoyed having him around. He was an interesting character. And I think he was a pretty good teammate to many of the players in there, and maybe particularly Eric Wood.
Yeah, and also, you know, LeSean McCoy also reached out to him on Twitter and saying, hey, man, I wish you weren't. You know, I'll pay you to stay.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And so it was, I don't think Richie Incognito did anything but earn the love and respect of the guys that he played with here in Buffalo. And he went to the Pro Bowl a couple of times for this team, and that says a lot.
He'll find a job somewhere. Somebody
if he wants him. One, maybe somebody will sign him. Absolutely, camp. Yeah. If he wants one, I'm sure somebody will sign him. It may be somebody right here in the AFC East. You know, it's one of those teams that he played so well against. But I think it's going to come to a team that plays the same style of running, has the same style of running game that the Buffalo Bills employed here. So you can that'll narrow your search.
Who's the Bills MVP in 2018? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll free 1-888-550-2550. We'll read some tweets on that in a moment. Wanted to bring this up, Steve. I get confused sometimes. I think we talked about this off air yesterday. Television ratings for sports, right? That wasn't on the air.
I don't think that was on the air.
It
wasn't.
But this came across my desk today, and thanks to Jeff Koltnick for sending this to us. The top 50 U.S. broadcasts so far this year to date, and we're only in May. We know that. It is amazing to me, especially with all the chatter about the NFL, you know, dying on TV and what's wrong. People don't watch the NFL. The NFL dominates. Television in the United States. Six of the top seven broadcasts, I'm talking about ratings here, six of the top seven highest rated broadcasts in the United States so far this year are NFL games. Number one, what do you think? Super Bowl, obviously.
Super Bowl 52, yeah.
Number two, the State of the Union Address, okay, with 45. By the way, the Super Bowl, 103 million viewers. State of the Union Address, 46 million viewers. The next five are NFL games. Right. AFC Championship game, 44 million viewers. NFC Championship game, 42 million viewers. NFC Divisional Playoff game, Saints Vikings, 35 million. AFC Divisional Playoff, Jacksonville Pittsburgh, 31 million. NFC Wildcard Playoff, 31 million. The Royal Wedding, just last weekend, the eighth highest rated television show in America this year with 29 million viewers. And then the College Football Championship, Alabama and Georgia. 28 million. So, and 10th is the opening ceremony for the Olympics this year, right. 28 million. The point is, 6 of the top 10 broadcasts in the United States so far this year have been NFL football playoff games. And as you go down the list, there's more NFL football, and it's mostly football. Some
Atlanta,
Olympics.
Philly is a number 11. 14 is the AFC divisional playoff game between Tennessee and New England. Then 17 is number 17 is the Buffalo Bills against Jacksonville.
That epic Bills Jacksonville game.
And that was a horrible game. I mean, it's fun for the Bills fans and stuff because it was the end of the drought and all that, and the way the team got in. It was fun in games for us.
Until they kicked off.
But yeah.
17th highest rated program in the United States this year. Yeah. Bills versus Jacksonville.
Yeah. And then 19 was Atlanta, LA Rams.
What's the point? The point is two things. You hear about the NFL ratings are declining. Well, and on television, the NFL rules, basically. Second thing, because we were talking about it, I think, off the air yesterday about NBA playoff telecast versus NHL ratings. In Buffalo, it appears to be pretty equal around the country. The NBA dominates. NHL is not even close. But they don't even – nothing in the top 20. Now, maybe – I don't know if the NBA finals, if it's Cleveland and Golden State again, maybe there'll be a top 20 TV show, but nothing comes close to football in particular. Football, Olympics, Academy Awards – the Royal Wedding and the State of the Union Address.
It is also one thing, too, that when you get to these playoff games, and the NFL does it right. I mean, it works that way in sports that there's such a build-up to those. It's like a weekly series in these reality TV shows like The Voice or Survivor or The Bachelor or The Bachelorette or, you know, all these that they build to a finale, and that's what the playoffs are.
Yeah.
So people start watching it more and more then. But even those, I mean, they're not even on the list.
Not even on the list.
And so the NFL, when they do use the season to build up these teams and you get to know them and you watch the stories that emerge from them, by the time they're culminated in a playoff berth, everybody does want to see them. And that's just a function of how the TV season works and how the football season works. So
you work on network television, Steve. I know you're on the road for all these games, but does anybody ever talk about, hey, the ratings are dropping, we're in trouble? No, right? I mean, you know it's a high-rated game in the cities that are involved.
Listen, they're still paying billions to get those games on. And I think other things, too. Here's the other thing that gets lost in all this rating stuff is, Murph, they're starting to pay billions to get the rights to broadcast them on phones. You know, they're starting to get the internet rights to, you know, stream live.
Yeah.
They're starting to – so that's bringing in – I mean, so you're saying, there's 10% less people watching on TV because there's 50% more watching it on their phone.
Right.
Or 50% more watching on their laptop or their Surface or on the internet. Yeah. They're streaming it live or they're over the top networks or they're catching it delayed or whatever. So there's a lot – there's still a ton of people watching, and I don't know that there's fewer – more so than there are more people watching it in different ways.
Yeah, and the other thing about television, and this is not I feel like we're maybe overstating the case, but the reason why advertisers love football on TV is that it's real time, and people can't really, zip through the commercials. You can't manage the time that way. You know, if you care about the game and you're watching it live, you got to wait for the commercials. You got to be exposed to the commercials.
That's right.
Key for advertisers.
That's right.
All right. MVP for the Bills this year. Who do you got? Give us a call. We will open up the phone lines when we come back. The line's open now. 803-0550. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. Steve and I both went defense. Who do you got for the Bills MVP in 2018? Give us a call or tweet it in.
Yeah, and here's a tweet from Jason early on. A.J. McCarron's going to make Charles Clay look like a stud again. So that's his MVP. Charles Clay, he thinks, is going to emerge. And Dwayne Smith says, hands down, Shady McCoy. If he stays healthy, there's so many ways he can contribute to this offense. My second answer would be the Buffalo Bills defense, who I believe will be the reason the team's competitive, keeping us in each week. Yeah, I mean, that's –
We need a player on
that's
defense.
That's a cop-out, man. You can't just pick the whole defense.
You pick a guy.
You got Murph picked Tremaine Edmonds. I picked Micah Hyde. We both think it'll probably be a defender. Although Shady is, you can't go wrong picking LeSean McCoy for anything, even if it's pickup basketball. I mean, right? And here from B. Bills, 0515, he agrees with you. With Tremaine on a stacked defense is going to be great. I'm not taking anything away from what he's bringing to the table. He's a beast, but he will shine with his raw talent and adjust the Bills' defensive scheme. The defense is stacked. One Bills love. Now, that's a nice one. We'll have to do that. That's,
one Bills love.
One Bills love. So he thinks Tremaine Edmonds is going to do it, and he agrees with you, Murph. And there's a lot to like about Tremaine Edmonds. We've said it. When you go out there, and we both kind of got caught off guard, we just said at the beginning of the show, how different this OTA looks like than what they've been doing the past 3.5-4 weeks. You see Tremaine Edmonds step up into the middle of that huddle, and you know what else, Murph? You see Josh Allen step into his huddle. They look like the kings on a chessboard. And they stand taller than everybody else. I mean, they're big. And it's fun to see, two young guys step into both those huddles and, be the – be the highest head.
Two rookies, yeah. Two first-round picks.
Yeah. I mean, it all sounds great, and you have all these fantasies about these two guys being the pillars of the franchise for the next 15 years, and, hey, maybe it'll happen. But it's certainly fun here at the beginning to see them take their first snaps at an OTA as Buffalo Bills.
MVP 2018 for the Bills. Who do you like? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Steve Tasker, John Murphy here until 3. One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health. We're brought to you from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. I'm told it's time to reset. Our producer, Jay Harris, says, let's reset. Okay, reset. Who's going to be the MVP on the 2018 Buffalo Bills? Phone lines open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Who'll be the MVP? Here's an interesting tweet from a Twitter person who calls himself or herself High Eichel Sprain. Good one. A question. An MVP on a 3-13 team? That's Twitter snark. That's classic Twitter snark right there, isn't it?
What was your clue about that being snark?
Well, the name, High Eichel Sprain.
High
and another Twitter respondent says, you're stuck in last season's guesstimates, guy. That's Twitter. That is classic Twitter. The back and forth, the exchange of ideas, the high level of dialogue.
Listen, I've told you this 100 times.
Yes, here we
Twitter's
go.
Twitter's the puke of society.
Yes.
There's probably some good stuff in there, but you got to go through a lot of bile to find it. And we got a whole staff of people out here that are sifting through all the stuff.
All the bile.
That is getting to the good stuff that we bring to you on the air. And then Murph goes down and throws the bile out on the air.
The bile, I've learned to laugh at the bile and appreciate the Twitter bile. I just learned it's funny. It's funny when people
nobody
say
uses their real
–
well, you and I do. I mean, I got at Steve
Twitter.
Tasker 89. And,
I'm out.
And you stick with the One Bills Live Twitter, so
yes.
That's all you do. But it's amazing what people come up with. And just because they have a button and a phone and can push send, they do it, man.
Yep.
It's just hilarious. And then every once in a while, it warms your heart when Twitter rises up and sets them straight. You know, when they get a reply that, you know, it's all good stuff.
MVP. Let's take a call. Maybe the calls would be better. Emmanuel from Hawaii. Emmanuel, how are you? Are you surviving the lava flows? What island are you on, Emmanuel?
I'm on Oahu, so I'm 100
no problem there.
From the Big Island.
And it's tragic out there. It's unbelievable pictures coming out of there, though. Woo!
Yeah, I had to do my Hawaii research to understand that it's actually pretty normal. But I want to talk about Nate Peterman. I think, like, nobody's mentioning, you know, John, I was kind of disappointed yesterday when you said that, you know, you don't want to see A.J. McCarron go a couple games and then, you know, start the struggle and you want him to throw Josh Allen in. I think
Emmanuel, I don't think that's exactly what I said, but continue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Allen, and I think that
that's not what I said.
That's a situation whether the Bills are losing or not, they need to keep Josh Allen on the bench and teach him how to play the game. I think Nate Peterman is an anticipatory thrower. I think that he had a bad game in San Diego. Three of those interceptions wasn't his. I think he can be a great quarterback. He just needs an opportunity. I love when people have a bad situation and come back and play great. And I don't necessarily believe in A.J. McCarron. I understand that he had a good game against the Pittsburgh in the playoffs, but what does that tell us about him as a quarterback? I just think that there's a lot of Bills fans and a lot of commentary, Buffalo local news that I read that just don't even mention Nate Peterman. Everybody's about A.J. McCarron. I don't understand. Just one quick favor. Can y'all keep me on the line so I can hear your reply, because I don't get your show until I get the app at 12 p.m.
Sure.
Gotcha. Yeah, okay. Emmanuel, that's a good call. I appreciate it. And you're right. I think one of the things that Murph and I would both advocate, because we don't have any skin in the game about who picked who and how they were drafted and who they were drafted and how much anybody's making, and I think most of the players in the locker room would fall into this category. We don't care if it's Josh Allen. We don't care if it's Nate Peterman. We don't care if it's A.J. McCarron. And we don't care if it's some camp body or the fourth guy that they have in, or if they bring back the kid that they cut in the rookie man. We don't care what everybody in on this program and what you'll find in the general public, they don't care who it is. If they find the guy that can be Jim Kelly or Dan Marino or Phillip Rivers or Drew Brees or any of those, if they can find a guy that can be an elite quarterback, that's the guy they want to play all the time, every snap. And if it's Nate Peterman, we are all for it. Because in this situation, particularly here in Buffalo, the way the quarterback situation is now, I think that's who it's going to be. They're going to let the best guy play. That's what the coaches want. That's what the fans want. And that's what they've positioned this culture to allow them to do. They, and believe me, the guys in the locker room are going to know who the best option is. And if the coaching staff doesn't put the best option on the field, then the players, their culture falls apart immediately. So, Emmanuel, you're right. Nate Peterman is not out of the mix. Forgive us for getting so caught up in the Josh Allen talk and the A.J. McCarron talk because A.J. Peterman is on maybe the back burner for a lot of people in their consciousness. Don't believe me. He's going to get his chance to compete. And for us, nobody cares who wins as long as the guy that they put in there it can turn into the best quarterback on the roster.
Yeah, two things, Emmanuel. And I think we get pretty much a call every day now from somebody saying, I don't know why no one's talking about
Nate Peterman.
Nate Peterman. Well, you are. And that every day we get somebody talking about Nathan Peterman.
Right.
We haven't discounted his opportunity. In fact, I think he will get a chance to show. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets substantial playing time in the preseason games. Secondly, to clarify, I never said throw Josh Allen in there. I said it could happen. And I believe it could happen that he is so outstanding in preseason and maybe in preseason games that he's the one, that he's so good. As Steve said, the players realize he's the one who should start, not anybody else. That could happen, I think, because of his talent. Number one, Josh Allen has talent. And number two, because he does represent the future. And maybe they see something in the summer and starting today and moving through the OTAs and minicamp, and then in the summer, it could be they see something that says, we got to play this guy now. That happens in the league. That could happen here.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you this, too. I see what you see in Nate Peterman, too. I was all on board last year when they made the move in week eight.
You were?
I was.
Why?
And I'm like him because when they benched Tyrod?
Yeah.
Because he threw for 56 yards.
Okay.
He threw for 56 yards in an NFL game, and maybe it was because I was mad at him, you know.
But I was. It was true. He threw for 56 yards in an NFL game starting all four quarters. You can't win like that. And at a time when this team needed to do something to continue this run to the playoffs, which subsequently led them to the playoffs, that was the most obvious and most invigorating move they could make was to put a guy in there with him. And I saw the reason I said that was because I see Nathan Peterman as an anticipatory thrower as well. Yeah. He threw the football before the guy was ready to catch it, and it was there right on time. And that's what an NFL quarterback has to do.
If we're revisiting history, I would say, and I thought it at the time, 6 months ago, I understand why they were looking to improve the passing game. They were in an almost intolerable situation with how bad the passing game was. But clearly there was a miscalculation on Peterman's readiness to play last November.
Yeah, and I get it, too, and I've said this before. Five interceptions in the first half. And I think he said, Emmanuel, the caller just now from Hawaii, said it was three of them weren't his fault. Two and a half of them weren't his fault. There were two of them that were not his fault for sure. And then the other two and a half, I mean, you can make a case for it, but there were two of them that were absolutely bad throws and bad decisions. And you can say, well, he wouldn't have been in that position if he hadn't have gotten those, you know, other interceptions, he wouldn't have been pressing for the – whatever. He threw them. And they had to live with the result, and it turned into a horrible day for him, and one that he's still dealing with. I mean, we're still dealing with it on the show.
I bet. What do you mean he's still? I bet he's not. Were you here when we had him on?
Yeah, I was here.
You think he's really dealing with that? I don't think so. I think he's moved on. I hope he has.
It's easier for players to move on than it is the fans.
Yeah, but he'll get asked something. About it every time
exactly.
he plays.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Dealing with it, people are still throwing it back in his face.
Yeah,
that's why. I mean, he's done with it. Players get over that stuff quicker than fans.
Let's anticipate it this way: if Peterman gets a chance to play in preseason, which I think he will, maybe a substantial half, maybe
he's
gets
going
a start.
To.
That'll be question one or two. How much did you want to play so you could put that Chargers game behind you? And by the way, he had a second start too. Against the Colts, where it was impossible to throw, but he will get asked that question. No question about
that. Yeah, and he's going to have to.
Way, he has to deal with it. But I don't think he wakes up in the morning and said, "Oh, I'm the guy who threw five interceptions."
Exactly. I don't either. I don't either. In fact, that's why I say players get rid. Deal with this stuff a lot easier. The interception.
Some bad picks
there. There was a bad pick. Yeah. There's no question about it. But I think. Players get over this stuff quicker because now Nathan Peterman's thinking about this year. He's not thinking about those five interceptions. Just like when a team looks bad, like this football team looked so bad against the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah.
They get over it fast because they're thinking about the next game. They're working towards getting better. They're working on fixing their mistakes. They're working on a new game plan. They're working on practice and getting better individually so that their team can get better. They're thinking about all that stuff. The fans are stewing about the loss because they aren't working at the next game. They stew on it. They sit on these games, and they kind of chew on it for a long time, which is the same way a player does with a bad performance. He's working towards the better performance the next time, and the fans, you know, they don't have anything to help them forget.
We're early with this question, but we ask it anyway. On the first day of OTAs, who will be the Buffalo Bills' most valuable player in 2018? Who do you have? Give us a call. Lines are open, 803-0550, and from outside Buffalo, toll-free at 1-888-552-550, or on Twitter at OneBillsLive. Brian Cook tweets in, smart money for this year for MVP is on either Shady or McCarron. Competent quarterback play almost automatically puts the quarterback in contention for MVP, but Shady is still Shady, and while we will be more balanced, we will still feed McCoy first. He will be the Bills' MVP if he remains healthy. That's a smart answer. That could happen. McCoy has been the MVP for a couple of years, so I guess that's why I'm inclined to look elsewhere. But, yeah, they are going to put the ball in his hands. He is motivated, right? He's got his career milestones in mind. I think they're going to be okay, offensive line, up front in the offensive line. And that's a good answer and a good reason why you would pick Shady McCoy.
Absolutely.
The Bills will be more balanced, but they're still going to feed Shady McCoy first.
Yeah, and let's face it, I mean, he's the one reliably elite player that you have on your club. And he has, and despite the fact that he's been in the league a while now, he, to me, shows absolutely no signs of letting up. He looked as good to me last year as he did when I first saw him with the Philadelphia Eagles standing on the sidelines doing radio broadcasts, and I said, who is that guy? And he looks the same now. I mean, he's really an elite and special back who is still talented, still makes great moves, has great vision, and is still productive even at this advanced stage of his career.
And he's been durable.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the crucial thing. You're right. I mean, he's their best player.
He's been durable to the point where you start to worry that maybe the luck will run out, right? He could be due. I don't want to say that even. But that's how durable he's been for a couple of years.
He's a completely different back in this, but he has the same kind of, you know, gift that guys like Barry Sanders did, where – yeah, they carried the ball a lot. They touched it a lot. But because of their vision and because of their slipperiness and because of their whatever gift you want to call that, they dodge hits. They dodge big hits. They're hard to get a clean shot on. And it works to their benefit in their durability and their ability to show up every week and play well because they never get really hit hard. It's easy for me to say that now in May. But the guy has really, really been a special back, and he's verging on all-time great when you look at some of the things he's done and the numbers he's getting in his career. It's, you talk about an MVP, you know, the conversation starts with him, I think, on that side of the ball anyway.
Question that we posed today, who will be the Bills' MVP this coming year? Steve Noble tweets, and this is an interesting answer, I think Kelvin Benjamin will surprise and have a big year. It sounds like he has dedicated his offseason to – getting his body in great shape, and it's also a contract year. I think Brian Daboll will take full advantage of his size and skills, and he will have 1,000-plus yards and 10 touchdowns. He could have 10 touchdowns. He's a red zone target. They tried to get him involved in the red zone last year. Had mixed success. He was banged up all year, kind of playing hurt most of last year, and of course they had the limited passing game. If they can get better in the passing game, I would think he would be the greatest beneficiary, and for that reason Steve Noble, that you might be right. He could be the MVP.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of things to like about Kelvin Benjamin. He's enormous for a wide receiver. He's built like a defensive tackle almost. He's so tall, and he's such a huge target. And there were moments last year when you think, man, I would throw it to him every single time He really single-handedly gave them the chance to win the Colt game in the snow last year with a couple of catches. And then in the Patriots game, which you're seeing highlights of now if you're on MSG, I mean, he had some great catches, and it was a go-to guy. So I like Kelvin Benjamin. We also got people who like the other side of the football still. Green Reaper tweets in, easy. It's Trey Day. He got snubbed by the NFL top 100 list and is going to give the league a Jack Nicholson, the Joker line. Wait till they get a load of me. You think about it.
Wait till they get a load of me.
Hey, Tre'Davious White could be that guy. He could be the lockdown corner of his generation. He had to see a guy come in as young as he was last year, play with the joy and exuberance he did, and be as productive as he was. Man, that's pretty special. I was excited for him.
All right, we're going to take a break. We've got a lot more to come, including a discussion with you. Who's going to be the Bills' MVP in 2018? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. This is the show we call One Bills Live. We do it every Monday through Friday, although this Friday we won't be here, Steve. Holiday coming up, holiday weekend. We're off Friday and Monday, so the four-day week prevails the next couple of weeks here at One Bills Drive. Pretty happy about that. It'll be all right, you know, because we got Thursday will be a big day here because we get a chance to talk to some of these players and hear from Sean McDermott after the first week, anyway, of OTAs, organized team activity. I was asking you this morning. In your day, Steve, back in your day, I don't recall OTAs. I don't recall an official designation of 3 weeks of OTAs. It was kind of like guys were just here on a regular basis, not all the time, but intermittently guys were here during the off season, right? Work out when you can. If you lived around here, you probably came by.
Yeah, we weren't restricted from being in the building. So we had guys that, in fact, when I was here, it was the kind of the era, and you're right, it changes all the time, which is interesting. That's the most – you know, vacillating requirement of all these teams, when they can have the players in the building and what they can do with the players. It used to be there were no restrictions, and that's when, like, guys like me, we were making enough money
that we could be pro athletes and not have to work in the offseason. Because I came in the league in 85, and there were the old guys that said, you know, I was selling cars in the offseason. I was working insurance in the offseason. I was building houses in the offseason. They had, you know, jobs they had to work to make, you know, to live the quality of life they wanted to live. Well, then when I came in the league, guys like myself and everybody else who came in the league after that, we were starting to make more money, enough money that you could live a whole year on the salary. And, you know, if you could budget yourself through the year. So as a result, you start being professional athletes. And we lived, like when I got to Buffalo, we lived here. I mean, it was me, it was Pete Metzlars, Frank Reich, Jim Kelly, all these guys. We all lived here.
How many lived here? Like 20? More?
10 or 15.
Because now maybe 3,
right,
4?
Yeah. Right. Well, see, that now it's different. It evolved out of that. So back then there was like a bunch of those guys. You know, we'd come in every day and work out together. We'd run, lift, we'd play racquetball. And, you know, depending on what the program has, Rusty Jones, who was a scientist, was way ahead of his time. There were a lot of times when they do all these cross-training stuff, we were doing that. We'd go down to gymnastics places and jump around and do different things to build core strength. And then we'd lift heavy and then we'd run. So you'd stay here and do this all year round because the money had changed. And there were no restrictions. And then they started coming in, and then the team said, no, listen, this is really working out. We got these guys that are, you know, like us guys who stayed in, like myself and some of the other guys, we were kind of ahead of the curve. And Rusty told Bill Poling and Marvin said, listen, we got some guys that are really making headway, getting to another level because they're here all the time. So they started saying, well, here, let's pay them $50 a day to come in and work out. So then you had guys that would come in for like 3 months, like this they're doing now, and they'd pay them $50 a day or whatever it was. I don't know what it was. Or maybe they put it in their contract. If you reached like Jim Kelly, some of the big stars, if we get him at another level, we're gold. So they'd pay him big money to come in and make a percentage of the workouts, and he'd do that. So now it's different.
Yeah.
Now these guys say, listen, I'm making Tom Brady, I'm making $25 million. I'll pay a guy, you know, 100, 200, 500 grand. I don't care. I'll pay the guy that to train me in California. I can live where I want. He can live in my coach house
and
in my mansion.
Training.
And I can, and he's working out with nobody but me.
Yeah.
So I don't have, I can met my own schedule. I can take off and go to the south of France with my supermodel wife. You know? That's what it's like. So I don't want to come back and grind it out in a dingy stadium on the field with all, you know, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So it's changed from that. And now the league has said, then you had, it was the voluntary involuntary.
Right.
Where it's voluntary, but you better be here or we're going to cut you.
Right. And I told you, I don't want to interrupt you, but the conversation I had with Troy Vincent while he was playing here this time of year, and nothing was formal, but it was, you were expected to be here. And he said to me, we got to do something about this. He went to work for the union and now the league, but his job was in that CBA. The Players Association made it their job to restrict how much. That was a big issue.
Right.
How much time do we have to spend? How much time are we required to spend during the offseason? That was a big issue.
Now, here's the thing, too. I think there's no question that the Players Union has the responsibility of keeping the league in check. And in this case, I think they were right because the league – well, I don't know if they're right now, but back then, you're right, because you had coaches, you'd be 9 to 5, Monday through Friday – whenever,
right,
you were going to put in the same hours as the coaching staff. They would have you here. You're going to be here. That's what it would be like if it wasn't for people saying, no, you can't do that. So, but by the same token for me, listen, they're paying me that kind of money. The money has grown exponentially.
Yeah.
The money's there now that they can start to make demands of these players. And I think one of the things that the league should do is say, listen, the fetters are off. You know, if you want to bring a guy in here, if you want to sign these free agents, you're going to have to make it attractive for him. If you're this kind of team where you're in there from January 1st all the way through June 15th before training camp every day, good luck signing free agents.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's where it's going to get to. I think if you're going to push these guys, you're going to have soft tissue injuries. You're going to have injuries in the offseason. You're going to have meaningless – you're going to lose great players for meaningless little drills in May. So I think he's put that in the laps of the coaching staff and the organizations because they're paying these guys enough money that if they want them to come in, they should do it.
We're almost out of time here this segment, but let me ask you this. If you can, what has it meant to the game the last now 6-7 years with the pretty restrictive OTA and mini camp regulations that have been put in place compared to 20, 25 years ago when you were playing? Is the game better? Are players better conditioned? Are they better schooled in what they need to do because of the time, the formulated time that they put in here as opposed to where they were 20, 25 years ago?
Yeah, they're better.
Better?
Way better.
In conditioning
or
everything?
They're more polished. They're more conditioned. They have a deeper depth of knowledge about what everything that's going on around them, at least at the best levels. They come out of college more polished these days with techniques at the skill positions for like corner. Like you're getting more corners coming out of college who've played bump man-to-man coverage, who've played also in a zone blitz kind of scheme. You've got guys who've been exposed to more high-level football coaching and also individual techniques and how to run a route, how to read a defense before the snap, that kind of stuff. Much more prevalent now than it was then. Plus, the guys who come out now and they go through these off-season things as a team, when they can start to install things at an earlier rate and start to build on what they've already learned, you're getting a much higher level of in-game adjustments from coaching staffs and players. You're getting a higher level and a more extensive ability and longer menus of plays that you can call during a game that will be run very well instead of, I don't remember that play.
Guys installed a training camp at Fredonia.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And we installed some basic things at these mini camps, but sometimes it was like a 3-day mini camp. That was it. I mean, what are you going to do? You know? Yeah. And so you get these 8-week things where they can come in, they spend some time, they don't go on the field, but they go in the classroom. That's invaluable, no question, because you can watch hours of film and it helps you. So, yeah, the game's better because of it.
All right. Hey, Russell Shepherd, wide receiver, a former Carolina Panther, Tampa Bay Buccaneer. He was here last week on a free agent visit. There was some thought that he might sign here with the Bills' needs at wide receiver. Instead, he is elected to sign with the New York Giants. Ian Rappaport says it's a one-year deal worth $1.3 million that can be worth up to $2 million with incentives. So no Russell Shepherd for the Bills. He's going to the New York Giants. We'll take a break. Hope to get a player coming off the field from today's day one of the OTAs when we come back for the second hour of the show. Come on back. We'll talk more about who the MVP of 2018 might be for the Bills as well. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Here at One Bills Drive, day one of organized team activity just completed for the Buffalo Bills. Another voluntary part of the offseason program. The entire team on the field at 11 a.m. For the first time today, they could line up offense versus defense. Bills with three OTA sessions this week, a total of 9 over the next 3 weeks as they work their way towards the mandatory minicamp in mid-June. The Bills release guard Richie Incognito from the reserve retired list yesterday. Told the Bills he wanted to play again, according to ESPN. The 4-time Pro Bowl offensive lineman announced his retirement in April. He's now a free agent and can sign with any other team. The Dolphins quarterback Ryan Tannehill trying to come back from a season-ending knee injury last year. He will participate with no limitations today when the Dolphins kick off their OTAs, followed by a 3-day mandatory minicamp. It's the most on-field work Tannehill has had since suffering a torn ACL during training camp last August. Running back Le'Veon Bell does not plan to attend the Steelers' OTAs, which begin today. The move expected. Bell still unsigned after getting the franchise tag for the second consecutive year. And the NFL owners are meeting today in Atlanta. Jerry Richardson, the outgoing owner for the Carolina Panthers, will make the final rounds, expected to briefly address the owners and say farewell before his team, the Panthers, is sold to David Tepper, and that is expected to be approved by the owners. Stanley Cup hockey. It's going to be a Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals now. Last night, Washington shut out Tampa Bay 3-0 in Game 6 of the series. They'll go back to Tampa Bay for Game 7 tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Bison's homestand continues tonight. 6:05 against the Syracuse Chiefs at the downtown ballpark. Last night, Rowdy Tellez hit an opposite field home run and drove in 3 as the Bisons beat the Chiefs 8-5. The Herd has won 5 in a row and their home record this year, 11-5. And back to hockey, Lou Lamoriello, the architect of 3 Stanley Cup championships and 5 conference titles during his 28 years with the Devils, is the new president of hockey operations for the New York Islanders. That announcement coming today. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio. Yes, sir, Steve.
Have you been following did you see the Caps Lightning game last night?
I watched mostly basketball last night.
Yeah, I was flipping back.
But I was flipping back and watched. Yeah. I think I saw two. I got lucky. Saw a couple of Capitals goals. It was a physical game.
I saw Oshie score his first one. It was. Yeah. It took him forever to score any, and then they ended up winning 3-0. But the Lightning. I mean, they're going back to Tampa Bay now. We don't have any skin in that game, you know, that series. But what? as crazy as crackpot or whatever you want to call him, as distasteful as Ovechkin's been over the course of his career, and he's been a great player. Are you kind of rooting for him or not? You don't care about him?
No.
Yeah, I don't know
why.
I
don't like the Caps.
I never liked the Caps.
Yeah. I don't like their owner. You know, I went
their
to a
owner. I don't even know who their owner is.
I forget his name, but I don't like him.
You care about him more than
is
I
it
do.
Me? So I'm watching the game last night a little bit, and I said, and we're watching here on our monitors, part of the feed from last night, NHL Network last night. The ice looks red in Washington, doesn't it?
It's pink. It looks pink.
Right? Because I'm watching last night saying to my wife, is there something wrong with our TV?
Well, no, it's both monitors I'm looking at.
I thought there was something wrong with my television last night. That was annoying to me. It doesn't take much to get me annoyed watching hockey, and that one bothered me last night. But really? No, I went to a Lightning game back in February and liked the atmosphere down there, so I have about a 2% interest in who wins that series, but I guess I would root for the Tampa Bay Lightning just because I like the fans. They have fun down there.
Okay.
They're into it.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
the Caps, man. Washington. Who roots? Nobody roots for anything in Washington. Come on.
They root against everything.
Yeah.
Right?
Now, the NBA, on the other hand, I think we are getting set up, Steve, for another Golden
State. LeBron's going to get to the finals again.
Yeah, another Golden State-Cleveland rematch, and I, for one, am excited about that. When I see Cleveland play the way they played now the last couple of games, and it's a new series now tied up at two wins apiece, I think the Celtics are kind of lacking in, I don't know how to describe it, dynamic talent. They're good. They're great defensively, but they can't score. They have no answer for LeBron. And now LeBron's teammates have come around, and they're playing well too, and they're a tough out. And I think Golden State will probably win the final series, but I look forward to it again. What would be three straight years now? Four straight years? Three straight years, Golden State and Cleveland. I'm anticipating that'll be the finals, and I can't wait. You're still a Celtics guy.
No.
Don't be a Celtics guy.
No, come on, man.
Nobody in Buffalo likes
Celtics.
I am
not a Celtics guy.
You can't like the Celtics.
You can like anybody you want,
no,
Murph.
You can't like the Celtics in Buffalo.
I'll start liking the Celtics out of spite. That's how much I care about
I'd rather
right?
have a Dolphins fan
I will
than
switch
Buffalo
allegiance
than a
just to
fan.
Just to make you angry. But I'm kind of with you. I'm into this the NBA thing. Just I got to be honest with you, because of LeBron, first and foremost. And then on side that, because of the Warriors. Because they're an intriguing team, and they're this super, super team.
They're great.
That was after LeBron went down to Miami with Dwayne Wade and Bosch, and they became the super, super team. And it, you know, and there was so much outcry when Kevin Durant went to the Warriors and chose the Warriors to play for that it was just unfair. It was a bad idea. And, you know, I was like, what are you talking about? I mean, that's – I think it's intriguing, and it gives Warriors a way to win. They can play that three-ball game where they just, you know, they light it up, or they give the ball to Durant, and nobody can stop him. He's 7'2", and he's a point guard. I mean, you know, he can do anything with a basketball. So I'm with you. I can't wait to see LeBron in yet another finals. I think at this point, if he were to win, let's say, for instance, let's say LeBron gets the Cavs there, and what happens, whatever happens, they get to a six-game or seven-game, and he wins another title for Cleveland with that group of guys he's playing with, I think he's the best player in history, if he's not already.
I think one or two.
I like Wilt above everybody else, though. I'm not really – I like Mike, too, Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
But I'm a big Wilt Chamberlain fan, and – he changed the game, no question. Now, he was early on in the evolution of the game, but I think you got to look at what he did and how the game changed during Wilt Chamberlain's career and say that guy had the most effect on what the game looks like these days. But I think LeBron is the guy who came in and does things just that nobody else has ever done.
It'll be great. Finals.
It's going to
be
awesome. Yeah. I am looking forward to the NBA Finals. That's if LeBron and the Cavs can finish off the Celtics. Yeah. Otherwise, I probably won't even watch.
If it's Celtics,
if it's
State.
Celtics, Golden State, I'll just read the box score, and we can talk about it as if we watched it.
That'll never stop us.
I really don't want to see the Celtics play because I think that'll be a massacre.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I mean, I don't know. That's why they're still going to play it.
Houston's not that good either, by the way.
I'm completely disappointed in Houston.
Not good.
What are they doing? How did they win 59 games?
I don't know.
They look bad. That's like 1973 basketball.
Yeah.
With maybe a little extra defense.
What do we got tonight? We got Houston and Golden State
tonight.
Houston, right?
It's over tonight. It's over tonight.
9
right?
o'clock tonight.
What's the
at Golden State. And it's 2-1 Golden State.
Okay. So they're going to go up 3-1.
Houston's got to win tonight or they're dead. Yeah. Hey, Bills MVP for 2018. Who do you like? Give us a call. Lines are open. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-552-550. Tweet it in, call it in. Let's talk about it. Coming up in a couple of minutes, a guy who you could make an argument he would have a shot to be the most valuable player if you're leaning on defense. As they finish up the OTAs and get their weightlifting in, eventually Jerry Hughes is going to join us here in studio. Right? I mean, you can make an argument Jerry Hughes could have a big comeback year and maybe be the most valuable player on this
given the bolstering of the interior defense. And I think that's – the pass rushers, I think, depend so much on getting help from everybody else. And you get Kyle Williams and this Harrison Phillips, Starlo Tulele inside. They've got three guys down inside. You rotate those through on a 4-3 defense, man, you've got some guys then. I mean, you've got some guys. And that's going to help guys like Trent Murphy, Jerry Hughes, Shaq Lawson, you know, get off the edge. And it's pretty intriguing to think how these outside guys like Jerry Hughes and Trent Murphy are going to benefit from those guys down inside. I think that's the key to the whole thing. In fact, we were talking before the show. I thought the first guy out of my mouth for MVP was Starlo Tulele.
MVP?
Except I think he'll be an internal team MVP. It won't be a fan MVP. I think the team will appreciate him when he has the kind of year he could possibly
have.
Not
likely to get numbers, you know.
Exactly. That's exactly like right. In fact, on the website, we went through that whole thing and went down our guys that we thought. And I thought he might be the most key acquisition as a player.
Hey, can we talk about the Patriots for a second? We talked about it a little bit yesterday.
I'm surprised you're going to bring this up because
– No, I believe there's something going on in New England. That's all I'm saying. I don't know what it is. OTAs are underway. Brady's not there. Gronk's not there. Let me just – somebody dug up. Now, Brady's 40 years old. Do I think that Brady needs to go to OTAs with his teammates? No. He'll be great this year. He'll be fine. However, in 2013, June 2013, just 5 short years ago, he talked about why the OTAs are so important. He said, Brady – this is Brady 5 years ago – you think it's just an OTA and it's springtime and not that important and those things probably enter your mind. The truth is, this lays the foundation for the start of training camp. And if you have a good camp, it usually means a good start to the season. And a good start to the season leads to good position going to the second half of the season. Everything has significance. You're not just out there. This is Tom Brady talking. You're not just out there running plays and going through different things that aren't going to mean anything. We're out here trying to get a lot of things accomplished. I think we have done that, but still a lot of work to be done, especially when you play for Belichick. There's always low lights when we come in the next day and look at video, even if it was a great offensive play. But the point is, Brady, 5 years ago, talked at length about how important OTAs were, voluntary OTAs, setting yourself up for training camp. And here he is, not there. He's going to play. I know that. He's probably going to be there for the mandatory mini camp in a couple of weeks. But I do think it's a difference from where Brady was 5 years ago and his approach from 5 years ago. Does he need it? No. He's 40 years old. He's going to the Hall of Fame. They're probably going to be okay again this year, the Patriots. But he's not there. Gronkowski's not there either, Steve.
Yeah, and Gronkowski, you know, he had his contract sweetened on May 24th of last year, and the rules won't allow a contract to be increased twice in 1 year span. So Gronkowski's got to wait until the 24th of this year before he can sweeten that deal. Now, he's scheduled to earn $8 million this year in 2018. And they could come together to do another deal, but it's got to be after May 24th. And that's – you know, Gronkowski's made no secret. That's what he hopes happens. Now, he's given up $250,000 in incentives for not making 90% of the offseason workouts. So you know that he's got to have something in the pot. As soon as they do the voluntary workouts and as soon as his contract is redone, you can bet that he'll probably sign up and show up. But I think Gronkowski's has more to do with his contract situation than it does with you know, making some statement about I don't want to be there or you know, being too busy to show up or not like showing up.
I'm Brady. I'm not insisting that he's making a statement, but by not being there from what he's done prior to this, he is making a statement. He probably, you're right, he's 40 years old. He'd rather be with his family. He's got his own private trainer out west in California. He's got stuff to do. He's got to put on some weird-looking sport coats and go to, you know, museum openings in New York City. I get that. You got to do all that. You have to do all that. But his approach has changed. He's different now than he was just 5 short years ago when he was 35 and totally locked in and being the first one there and the last one out and getting the parking spot because he made all the offseason workouts. That guy's no longer there for the Patriots. That's a change, and that has my attention. Are they going to fall off the table and win 4 games? No. No, not likely.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think there's any question that his attitude about the offseason and about what it takes and what he's willing to do for all the other guys on the team, is he's probably starting to do a double take. Because let's face it, when Tom Brady showed up when he was 35 years old and had been to, what, five Super Bowls instead of seven Super Bowls, or
sounds about right,
four Super Bowls instead of seven Super Bowls, or whatever, and he'd won a bunch of MVPs, and he was a Hall of Famer 5 years ago. When he was doing that, Tom, in my opinion, he wasn't doing that because he needed the work or because he needed to get better. He was doing it to set an example for all the rum-dums on that, you know, for the, he was doing it for the culture.
Rum-dums.
He was doing it for all the others who did need to see the best guy in the league come in and work hard.
They don't need to see it now?
Well, here's the thing. I think he's kind of done doing their work for him. I think he does. Listen, if they want to come be a part of this team, they better show up and be on time. And you can bet, too. And here's another thing we may never find out if this happens. When he does show up, he's going to tighten the screws on all those guys.
Who is?
Tom Brady.
Is he?
He's gonna hold the bar just like he has.
Does he have the authority to do that if he's not there for all these workouts?
I've heard stories already that he's done that before. I heard one guy tight end got in first chance he got to get in. He was kind of a backup, behind Gronkowski, and this was back when Aaron Hernandez was there as well. And he's kind of an okay guy, just kind of trying to hang in there, find a spot. He gets in for one play with the number one huddle, goes in, jumps off sides, and Brady sent him out of the huddle, and he never saw the field again.
Does he still have that authority, though? If he's not.
You think he's got less?
If he's not there now, he may.
No.
He may.
No. In fact, I think he may be at the position, and this may be a statement about this, his absence. He may be a statement about, listen, not only do I have it, I'm going to exercise it. I'm not going to show up for off-season workouts. And when I do show up, I'm going to have even more power to say how this goes. Because you don't have Jimmy Garoppolo behind me now. Who you got behind me now?
Yeah.
Who are you going to bench me for now? Yeah, we don't even know who that guy is. Brian Hoyer?
Yeah.
No. So he's got even more power now because he doesn't have Jimmy Garoppolo in behind him.
All I'm saying is something's up in New England. Something's up. The relationship between I did see it. I got to read this tweet because I came across it earlier today from Pete Prisco. And it was on this exact issue. I got to find this. And he agrees with you, I think. I don't know what's up, but I think something is up with Brady and Belichick, and to a lesser extent, Gronkowski. He's not as critical, I don't think. Here it is, Pete Prisco, 2 hours ago. The Tom Brady-Bill Belichick feud is fun and all, but it won't matter come week one. Two pros, two greats. I think he's probably right. Yeah. Once they get playing games, it won't matter. But as someone who longs for the day when the Patriots finally ride off into the sunset with all their gleaming Lombardi trophies and are ready to come back to the field, if this is accelerating that day, I'm all for it.
Listen, in Buffalo, in Western New York, it's gonna when Bill Belichick hangs it up and retires, it's gonna be like that Wizard of Oz moment when the Wicked Witch gets melted by a bucket of water.
Yeah.
And the people in Buffalo are going to start singing songs and dancing.
Ding dong.
And here, yeah, you can have the witch's broom. You take it with you. That's what's going to happen because, let's face it, that guy, whether you like it or not, he's the best that's ever done it. And we've had to watch it and been the victims of it all far too often in this franchise and in this division and in
probably
this
more than any other team. I know, and the numbers would suggest that.
I don't know
that.
Any other team, but the Jets probably aren't going to be too unhappy to see him go. No, neither
but I think
the
Bills' record against the Dolphins or against the Patriots is worse than anybody.
I get it. It doesn't surprise me.
Yeah,
because the Bills were bad for a long time. They were 17 years it was, and so it's going to be. It's a little bit like it was in the 70s with Don Shula in Buffalo. They didn't win a single game against him in the 70s.
I know
that was rough.
Yeah. It was bad.
But things turned around in the 80s and the 90s. So there you go.
All right, who's going to be the Bills' MVP this year? Give us a call. We got lines wide open at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Or on Twitter at OneBillsLive. Josh S. tweets in, Trent Murphy will be the MVP with Starr and Kyle up front. Trent will be able to put pressure on the quarterback. I see 10 or more sacks and interceptions due to his quarterback pressures. That's optimistic and could happen. I mean, Trent Murphy's got to remember coming off an injury. He is a remarkable physical specimen with a remarkable workout ethic. But, there are questions about Trent Murphy, and is he fully back from his injury last year? It would appear that way, but we're going to have to find out. So I appreciate the optimism, Josh S., but, man, that's a lot on his on Trent Murphy's plate.
And as we said, people take a lot of liberties on Twitter, but we also have one from Brian Rosignol who took a liberty. He said, Coach, he thinks it's going to be Coach Daboll. Lifting the offense should be easy to do, both having a quarterback unafraid in the passing game and the players that have something to prove, and like Benjamin, Zay Jones, and the offensive line. The bar is really low after last year. So he thinks, and I've said that I think the biggest free agent acquisitions for any franchise are always whatever coordinators they happen to land. If they get a big-time coordinator who makes a difference, those are the guys that make the difference rather than any of the players. And that's a nod to that along those lines. But I still think it's not what we're looking for as a player, an MVP as a player. I think you got to go with one of the guys actually on the field. Although Daboll's going to be a difference maker, yep. I think. No question.
Here's a tweet from Hutch. He thinks the Bills' MVP in 2018 will be Tremaine Edmonds. He says, we're going to rely on our defense to win. He's going to be the leader of that unit. Obviously, can argue Shady and or Tre'Davious White as well. Yep, I agree. And Robin Mundy tweets in, Tre'Davious White, the forgotten one from the national media. Yeah. I wonder, I haven't talked to Tre'Davious about that. And we'll get him in here sometime in the next couple of weeks. I hope before camp
we'll
anyway.
We'll talk to him.
Because I wonder if he feels slighted. I don't think we've ever had him answer that question. I think he does a little bit. Slighted about the Pro Bowl snub and although when you read like many of the websites, especially the the analytics websites, he is the highest graded corner on in many people's estimation. You know, as far as what
he's
he
in
the
top
the
two or three, always,
always
in
yeah.
every way. He's, if
not
he's
just
not,
rookies.
If
by
he's
the
not
way.
Number one, he's number two, and well, he's not. If he's not number one, he's number two, and if he's not number two, he's in the top three. I mean, he is not out of the top echelon of the best corners in the league. Not just the AFC, not just the AFC East. He had as good a year as any corner in the league last year, and you can make an argument that he maybe had the best year. So, and people are doing that. And so for him not to be in the top hundo, it's an oversight, I think. And sometimes you do that. It used to be, you had to do it twice in 2 years to get your recognition for the last year, the really good year you had. You had to do it again next year, and then they say, yeah, he's been good for a couple of years. So I think Tre'Davious White falls into that in a lot of counts, but he is getting – by all the analytics websites you go to, Tre'Davious White is an upper echelon elite corner in the NFL, even after just 16 games of his career.
Can I read you a couple tweets, Steve, about the Patriots, the Belichick?
All right, let's hear it.
Postman Pilot says, what do you guys think about fans who want to win while Brady and Belichick are still relevant and say our success would not hold weight afterwards? He goes on to say, I'm with you, Murph. Doesn't bother me. Get him out. A win's a win.
Yeah, I get it. People want to beat the Patriots when they're at their best.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
We've tried. I mean, it's been tried for a decade and a half. I don't know.
I get it. I remember, but, they were, and I remember being on a great team, and you'd be in a game, and I remember this game specifically, the Monday night game in New England when they had it won, and the Bills fumbled a kickoff return late and gave up the game.
Yeah.
You
Leo McCalvin fumbled.
Games like that, great teams win, not when they shouldn't win. They steal games they shouldn't have had a chance to win. They steal games that they absolutely tried to give away. Great teams do that. Great players do that. And, great teams give themselves opportunities late in games with desperation plays, with, forced fumbles, with block kicks. All of that stuff comes out. And that's what happened. That's the way the Patriots were for a long time with the Buffalo Bills. I think those days are a little bit gone. Already, I think the Buffalo Bills have gotten to a point, particularly with this regime and this coaching staff, you're not going to steal a game from this group of players and this coaching staff. And I think that says as much about where the Buffalo Bills are as it does about where the Patriots are. This is an organization now with one Bills drive that they don't give games away. I saw that last year, and sadly, it was a welcome change from what it had been, right? I mean, you look back at that Monday night game against Dallas when they turned it over five times and won with a 53-yard kick, and that Monday night game that I was just talking about where they had the – in New England, on the road, on a Monday night, and they absolutely gave the game back to him with a fumble on a kickoff return. All you had to do – all you had to do was return the kick. The most important part of the play wasn't getting a touchdown. It was just ending the play with the ball.
Yeah.
And they couldn't do it. And the Patriots stole that game. And it's happened, other times as well. But that's – great teams do that. They give themselves a chance to steal a game where they have no business winning, and they do it.
Just a call from Joel in Pittsburgh. Joel, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Okay.
Great.
Sort of an unsung hero, and it might be because I'm an offensive lineman, but Deion Dawkins. I mean, yes, he played for Cordy Glenn on the left side last year, but this is the first year where he's stepping in as the left tackle, the anchor of the line. And, you know, there's obviously question marks up with the O-line, and I just think he's going to, you know, step to the plate and get the job done and sort of go unnoticed, as all O-linemen do.
You know, Joel, and he was not a fill-in last year. He started the final 11 games last year.
Well, yeah, what I'm saying is coming into the season, he wasn't.
I got you.
And I'll tell you what, too, the national media doesn't even know who he is. They think Cordy Glenn's still the left tackle of the Buffalo Bills, and they traded away a franchise left tackle who took every snap last year. I mean, you read the articles about what the Bills have lost. They lost Cordy Glenn in 2017 in the first month of the season.
And by the time in the second half of the season when Cordy Glenn could have returned, it was over. Deion Dawkins was the left tackle. Cordy Glenn was not going to come back. I don't think people appreciate that. I don't think they understand that.
They don't get that.
Dawkins was the left tackle for most of last season, and certainly by the second half of the season, regardless of health of Cordy Glenn. It was done. It was over.
He had won the job.
Yeah.
And good for him. And you're right. The best offensive linemen are the ones you don't notice because they don't get penalties, and your offense is humming along doing great. I mean, that's the best-case scenario. And you're right. All offensive linemen, they never get the credit they deserve. In an everyday week to week basis during the regular season, particularly when things are humming along, because you know that's why people want to play quarterback. The quarterback gets all the glory, and the wide receivers get credit for the big plays. But the offensive linemen are—I mean, you talk to anybody—that's—and we've heard it on the show. If you've got a great, big, huge, awesome, dominant offensive line, you're going to be fine. Your offense will be fine.
To our question, who will be the Bills MVP? From Tiffany Daniels. Kyle Williams gets my vote. He is the heart of the team, anchoring the defensive line. He'll lead the Bills' defense into the top 10 and a playoff berth this year. There's one of your top 10s, Steve.
That's right. There you go.
We never got any kind of wager down on that, but we'll see.
No, but listen.
Kyle, I'll tell you what, Kyle would have been a candidate for the MVP last year. I don't know if it'll be that.
Listen,
way
he was
year.
The heart and soul of that club. He
it
brought the he brought
years.
He brought everybody together in a year where the change in culture was palpable. He was the engine behind it. He and Eric Wood and Micah Hyde, all of those guys who came together and made that last year something a little bit special. It was. Yeah, I'm sure that he would have gotten a lot of votes in the locker room. I don't know about the fans appreciating what Kyle Williams did, but you talk about what happened in the locker room, and I'll bet you the players would have definitely voted
MVP last year.
MVP, yeah.
Can you forecast that for the upcoming year? Well, I'd hate to vote against it because I have such regard and respect for Kyle Williams, but I think, you know, all of us are kind of looking for the next guy, right? The next star, the next guy that you can lean on for a decade or more.
Yeah.
That's why I picked Tremaine Edmonds. You picked Micah Hyde. Both of them qualify for that, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, it's just a factor of Kyle being around so long. All right, Jerry, you standing by. He's going to be on with us momentarily, so stick around for that. At the top of the next hour, 2 o'clock, Peter King, longtime columnist around the National Football League, 29 years with Sports Illustrated. Of course, mmqb.si.com. He has put that away. He's moving on to NBC to do some writing and broadcasting in the months ahead. And we'll talk with Peter King about that and about the NFL and about the Bills coming up at 2 o'clock today. So come on back. John Murphy, Steve Kasker here. It is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker and John Murphy. We're talking about all this stuff going on. And we were talking about some of the problems we have with social media, with Twitter sometimes.
Yeah, you're getting...
No. Listen, Twitter is a must. I mean, it is an absolute must. You got to have Twitter if you're in our business. But for us, I mean, we're required by the nature of our business to... You know, to put up with some things and with it that a lot of people, thank goodness, don't have to do. But anyway, that we were talking about in the break, but also we were talking about this about the national media's view of the Buffalo Bills. We were talking about Cordy Glenn and how this left tackle, who had been a very good left tackle for the Buffalo Bills, struggled, had some foot and ankle issues during training camp last year, kind of tried to go early in the season. Then he had to sit down, and Deion Dawkins took over for him, and all of a sudden Deion Dawkins was the best option, and they left him in there for 11 straight games, and he became the left tackle of the Buffalo Bills. Now, having said that, then the Buffalo Bills say, well, okay, but Cordy Glenn, and they used that – they used that perception in the country that Cordy Glenn was their franchise left tackle and traded him to the Cincinnati Bengals to move up all those spots in the draft. So a guy that was perceived around the country as the starting left tackle for the Buffalo Bills, which is, you know, I'm sure how the Buffalo Bills marketed him on the trade market, they used him to move up in the draft to get their guy, knowing that Cordy Glenn wasn't even their left tackle that was going to play for him. So it was a boost for them. So the national media has some things, and it made me think of it because I'm going through, and these are my guys at CBS Sports that put this little article
out. Yeah, I looked at this article, and it is CBSSports.com, and the author's name is, I hope I pronounce it correctly. Maybe I don't hope that. Sean Wagner.
Wagner McHugh.
McHugh or Magoo?
McHugh.
I was just thinking Magoo. Maybe it's Mr. Magoo.
Well, it's MC capital GOUGH.
Magoo.
All right, we'll go with Magoo.
Sounds better.
All right. So Mr. Magoo said, that's so wrong. I don't even know the guy, and we're sitting here making fun of him.
Well, because, you know, he's done a survey of the AFC East and offseason, who had the best offseason. Right, so, yeah. And his Bills grade is not it's not good. What's he give him, a C?
He gave them – wait,
C
I'm
plus.
Going down.
C-plus.
C-plus, right. So
whatever.
Say Patriots got a C, and the Jets got the big one. They got a good grade, like a B-plus or something like that. But, see, the key additions to the Buffalo Bills, you got them at A.J. McCarron, Starlow Tulele, Trent Murphy, Chris Ivory, Marshall Newhouse, Vontae Davis, Philip Gaines, Russell Bodine, and Raphael Bush. Those are the key additions. Now, the key losses, Tyrod Taylor, okay, Jordan Matthews, okay, Deontay Thompson, okay, Richie Incognito, Eric Wood, Preston Brown, and E.J. Gaines. Those last four, Incognito, Wood, Brown and Gaines, yeah, I would say that. But they also had Cordy Glenn in there as well. And a lot of people around you, every time you talk about what the Bills are doing on offense, they say, well, they lost their left tackle. And, yeah, you just don't. I don't see it that way. Now, you can say what you want about Richie Incognito and Eric Wood. Eric Wood would still be the center of the Buffalo Bills had it not been for an injury that ended his career, a degenerative injury. But that's the perception around the NFL, is that the Bills lost, you know, their entire offensive line. And I think when you get down to it, I think the only guy they lost was Eric Wood.
Incognito, I mean, they intended on having him play, Steve. They signed him to a contract.
He took a pay cut.
Yes. You're telling me that if Incognito had his little meltdown and retired and then come out of retirement, you don't think they would be counting on him to be a starter on the offensive line this year? I do.
Well, that's a good question, because it would come down to this. Would they have drafted Wyatt Teller?
Maybe not.
That's the question, because then you don't know. If they drafted Wyatt Teller thinking there's no way Richie Incognito is going to be ready to play, and plus they made him take a pay cut, so they knew his production. This is a guy that's a Pro Bowl guard on multiple occasions for the Bills. But, you know, something was going to change there, I think.
I think after this season, after the 2018 season, for sure.
I think
they probably would have gone through another year with him, at least started the year with him, with Incognito. I really believe
And I think the only reason they say that is because they took Wyatt Teller in the draft. Once they took him, they had cut all ties with him. But nevertheless,
I think before they took him, they had cut all ties.
Nevertheless, we're at the point where Eric Wood is the guy you're trying to replace, because they feel like with Groy and some of the other free agent acquisitions, with Groy and Wyatt Teller, John Miller, they feel like they've got that covered now. Center, Russell Bodine, no question. He's an experienced guy, not a household name, but he's a guy that they obviously did their homework on. And if he's anything like the rest of the free agents they signed, he's probably going to be the guy that starts during the regular season.
I wouldn't discount Groy there, Steve.
Right. And even if it's not, even if it is Groy, and I'll tell you this, we said this when this happened, when Eric Wood went down, that Groy was the guy, last guy standing. He was the swing guy last year. He would come in at guard or center on game days if somebody went down or needed a break, or if a guy, you know, twisted his ankle for one play and had to come out. Groy is the first guy in on the interior of the offensive line.
And two years ago, he was a pretty capable starter when Wood got hurt for the last, six, eight games of the year.
I'll tell you what.
At center.
You know what I noticed about Groy, and I've said this before, he is a big dude. He's bigger than Eric Wood. I mean, he is I was shocked. When I saw him and I was in the tunnel and watching these guys come out of the tunnel in game day in their uniform, I was like, who is that guy? I was shocked at how big he was, even standing next to Eric Wood and Richie Incognito. So he's physically big enough to handle a loaded guard down inside, and, of course, he's got the experience. He's been a part of the culture. He's been a part of the team. So I think the offensive line for the Buffalo Bills, now there's no question, they got to come together and start to communicate, and they've got to – you know, offensive linemen are it kills me to say this because I pay them compliments like this, and they always, you know, it's like, yeah, they are articulate. They're good. They're communicators. They're thinkers. Even the guys with the nasty reputations, those animalistic guys, you know, the guys that have a big, wide, nasty, mean streak in them, they're articulate because they have to talk to each other constantly. And you'll see between plays on offense, as this played out, when – you know, the play's over, you'll see offensive linemen seek each other out, start talking to each other because they have to make sure they're doing it sound out. That's the thing that this preseason's got to come together. You don't know which of the five guys of all those 12 guys they have on, or whatever, 12, 11 guys they've got on the roster, which one five are going to play the best. And that's what they find out. It's a chemistry test.
Yeah, and we talked about this yesterday, and we talked about the most competitive battles on the Buffalo offense.
Right. They were one of them.
Offensive line, I think, might be the winner. You know, a lot of people voted receivers. Some people thought quarterbacks.
But... well, the quarterback won statistically, but the race was really between wide receiver and offensive line.
This Mr. Magoo article, CBSSports.com. He claims the Bills blew it all up from after they made the playoffs last year. Okay, I get that perception of the Bills. He spends a lot of time on quarterbacks. He said the Bills watched the top free agent quarterbacks land elsewhere before they signed the last remaining bridge quarterback on the market in A.J. McCarron. Well, that's one way to look at it. Who did they let get away that you would really want to be the free agent, the bridge quarterback? I mean, is there anybody that was in that group and the money that was paid to that group? Teddy Bridgewater, did you really want him to come here? And then he gets into
Case Keenum.
Are we missing out not having Case Keenum on the Buffalo roster? Cousins maybe differently, but he'll go in there as, you know, a bona fide starter. But
they let Cousins get away.
Yeah.
The Washington Redskins, the team who drafted him, let him walk. The Kansas City Chiefs let Alex Smith go. And the Washington Redskins felt like they got an upgrade with Alex Smith rather than Kirk Cousins, who was the hot free agent. And I agree with him. Alex Smith's better than Kirk Cousins. So there are question marks with all those guys. And I'm telling you that I thought A.J. McCarron is the one. Maybe it is because we don't know enough about A.J. McCarron. We haven't seen enough of him. Maybe he doesn't have the measurables. He doesn't have the huge arm, or he doesn't have the experience, or we don't get to see him play. But when he got in for a Cincinnati Bengals team, he played winning football. He had a 64% completion percentage, and that was with a bad game included against Pittsburgh, in a game which actually he played well enough for them to win, had their defense not folded up its tent. And the people on MSG are seeing the highlights now. He's in a rainstorm, and he completed 56% of his passes in that playoff game and gave him a chance to win with a touchdown. I like the signing of A.J. McCarron. He was the one I was most intrigued by when this whole thing started, because all those guys, Case Keenum, Nick Foles, and who Nick Foles was never even a free agent, so he wasn't even available, Kirk Cousins,
Bridgewater,
okay.
None of them.
Teddy Bridgewater, okay, all right, I get it. They all had good seasons and good moments, but so did A.J. McCarron. I don't know, and I get this too. This guy says, yeah, the Bills blew it all up. Well, yeah, they did. They traded away their starting quarterback from a year ago to the Cleveland Browns. They were 31st in the league in passing.
Right.
That's why they felt.
Not a bad thing to blow
it's
up.
Not a bad thing to blow up.
Mr. Magoo finishes talking about quarterbacks, and he's not a fan of Josh Allen, which is fine. But I think we have discovered plenty of people who feel the other way. But Mr. Magoo writes, nobody knows how Allen will adapt to the NFL. Josh Allen, the draft is a crapshoot, but he appears to be the most likely bust out of all the first-round quarterbacks based on his college resume. I don't believe that. I haven't heard too many people say that. He was the 7th overall pick. You had the Arizona Cardinals trying to get up there to get Josh Allen, so they felt pretty good about him. The Arizona Cardinals were heartbroken.
The Arizona Cardinals were heartbroken over not getting Josh Allen.
So, Mr. Magoo, it's Sean Wagner Magoo. I don't think he knows what he's talking about. I really don't. With all apologies to your CBS colleagues.
Yeah.
Look, he's got. I don't know how many teams he's going to do, but he's got to look at 32 teams probably, and and assess their offseason, and you can poke holes in what the Bills have done this offseason. I think you're poking the wrong holes.
We've got people tweeting us in right now. They want to know where we can find this article. It's on CBSSports.com. You can get it, and it's the guys, Sean Wagner Magoo. Yeah.
AFC East offseason grades.
Right, and they talk about the Patriots and the Jets in the headline. So it's pretty interesting. To talk about, and we're always interested here in Western New York, and we're inside of, you know, this fan base about what people outside the organization think about what has happened. And for the most part on this show and the people we've talked to, Murph had on the show, everybody from Peter King to Phil Simms to Albert Brandt, you know, you go down the list, they were all very high on what the Bills have done and what they're doing. Now, a lot of them think the Bills have taken the long view about rebuilding. They think they've sacrificed their ability to win games this year in order to get better at a later date.
Some people believe
that. And I'll tell you what, for those of us who, and I wasn't doing this job, obviously, last season, but I was coming on once a week, and I watched every Buffalo Bills game. And I don't know how you can sit down and watch how the season transpired in Buffalo, and Bills fans know this, without thinking that the offense needed to be revamped. And that just about any changes you were going to make were going to be a positive. Now, there's no question they may not rush for 2,000 yards again like they did a couple years ago, or you know, have the top running game in the league. But they've got to throw it better. That's the whole point of the exercise. They could not throw the football last year. And people are looking at the wide. Let me tell you, they're looking at the wide receivers: Kelvin Benjamin, Zay Jones, Jordan Matthews, that whole crew they had there last year. Nah, they can't throw it. They didn't have any wide receivers. Let me tell you something. This is your quarterback makes your wide receivers. Jim Kelly made the guys he threw to. Dan Marino made the guys he threw to. You don't tell me Tom Brady didn't make Julian Edelman, Wes Welker, and all those other guys that I can't even think of their names now. Those guys were afterthoughts for a lot of teams. Chris Hogan. I mean, come on. It takes a guy pulling the trigger for you to have good receivers. That's all there is to it. You can have guys open, running open all day, and if they don't get the ball thrown to them, they get forgotten about.
Yep.
So don't think that it wasn't the fact that it was the wide receivers not making the quarterback look good. I've always been bothered by that. It's the quarterback, man. It's the quarterback.
We're back with more in a moment. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, waiting on Jerry Hughes. Hope to get him. We do have Peter King scheduled at 2 o'clock. I think that'll come through for us. Peter King's going to be interesting. He's got, obviously, decades of experience covering the National Football League and a new, you know, he's kind of on the forefront, Steve, and we're going to talk to him. You spoke to him earlier. Of where I think the business of sports media is going. Peter King became for lack of a better term, like a multi-weapon player here. You know what I mean? A dual threat. He can write. He can broadcast. He can blog, he can do stuff on the internet, and which probably is the main reason why he's been around for three decades or more covering the NFL.
Yeah,
his versatility.
Yeah, it used to be just print, it's all you could get, or highlight shows. Remember when we were kids?
Yeah.
I mean, I used to stay up till halftime of Monday Night Football because that was the only highlight show you could see. You'd see Howard Cosell, voice over the highlights from around the National Football League, and it was awesome. People loved it, and then. You know, then ESPN came on board in 1980, or about 80, I guess, and you know they were showing ping pong at 3 a.m., but you started getting highlights, and because of that, then you know now all of a sudden, and that took off, and now it became more about what it is now. And Peter King survived all of it.
I knew Peter when he mid 80s. Now he was the beat reporter covering the Bengals for the Cincinnati Inquirer, I think.
Yeah.
But he managed to – well, I want to ask him about this. We'll talk to him about it in a couple of minutes when he joins us on the show. He managed to branch out and kind of stay current with the times and adapt to whatever the emerging media was. And here he is still going strong at age 60.
Yeah, now, we're talking about, you know, how things have changed. I mean, we use Twitter as a tool on this show. And, and like we said, you know, I made the comment earlier, there's some good stuff in there. You got to sift through some to get it. But there's some pretty insightful stuff out there. And plus, it's, you know, you follow the right people. And in our business, you have to follow everybody. And we were told when I was at CBS, you have to be on. You have to be on Twitter because that's where everything happens first.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they're right. I mean, it's a really addicting website. If you get on there and start down a timeline and start down, you know, talking to these people and how it's working out, you can keep track of a lot of things at once on it, and it's been invaluable in our business, and I'm sure it's going to continue to be.
Peter King coming up at 2. In the meantime, we want to hear from you. Who will be the Bills' 2018 most valuable player? It's a long way off, I know, but let's talk about it. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550, the number. Dan calling from Florida. Dan, where in Florida are you, please? Hello, Dan.
I'd say I'm working now.
okay.
Go ahead.
Florida's pretty big.
You know, well, exactly. So that's why I use the state versus the city.
Dan is undercover in Florida.
Exactly. Well, I'm. It's not like I'm not working. It's just that I'm on drive time. I work in medical device, so you got to go from hospital to hospital.
Okay.
All right.
Anyway, so my quick comments are this. One, I think Tre'Davious White is going to be an absolute rock star this year. I really do. And I know his name probably has not come up enough. I only was able to listen for a few minutes. Because I can only listen between hospitals. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Go ahead.
The second thing is I'm so glad you got Peter King coming on because he is my absolute favorite analyst ever, you know, and nothing against you, Murph, or you, Steve, now. And by the way, it was really nice, Steve, that Peter and MMQB gave you those nice accolades, you and Frank Reich. I was like, oh, that's awesome. So I read that story this morning. And so I just wanted to say God bless him. And he's given us, what, 28 years and deserves all the credit. I mean, he was on 60 Minutes, for criminy's sake, because he is so impactful in his way to be able to get involved in the game and the players and get things out of them that nobody else could get out of them. Do you know what I'm saying? So just so impressed with him, and I am so glad. And please, please tell him that we all love him. You know, I've never heard of anybody not saying that Peter King is the best.
Yeah, that's a good point. Thanks for the call, Dan. That's great. And get back to work, you. But
get off the phone.
Yeah, I appreciate it. That's and I agree with you. I've Murph and I were saying yesterday when we read his final column of Monday Morning Quarterback, and he's not going away.
Right.
He's going to be on NBC now. But so many people used his Monday Morning Quarterback article to begin their week and to put in perspective some things, not only the things that are the stories of the day in the National Football League, but also give them things that they weren't keeping track of. Peter always delved into things that were not just the stories of the day, but also cool things of guys on the periphery. And I thought that was really one of the best parts about his articles, which he's going to continue. I think Peter is going to do it's a little bit like we had June Jones on yesterday. I said, writing is a little bit like coaching and the mafia. You don't quit writing until you're gone. So I think Peter's going to continue to do that, and I'm with you. I think he's one of the best. He's certainly one of the fun guys to speak to. I spoke to him this morning, getting ready for him.
Final comment, Steve.
Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
I when I was in college, my dad worked for the Buffalo News for 44 years, and so that was my college job. I did a whole bunch of different stuff. I got to know Mr. Felser really, really well, and so my dad actually went to his funeral. They were really close friends because of knowing each other for so long, and you're right. I mean, think about Felser. I mean, like, I think he was writing until he almost passed away, and, you know, he's that kind of a guy, you know? So, I mean, like, I just couldn't wait for his Sunday articles. And that's the same thing with Peter King. So anyway, let me get off the phone so I can actually get in here and talk to the surgeon. But
I make the surgeon wait.
All of your time, guys.
Thanks, Dan.
And you guys are the best. And Steve, you need to be in the Hall of Fame for the first special teams guy that's not a kicker or punter because we all love you. Okay.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks, Dan. And he's right. I mean, you go back over the years and guys like Will McDonough in Boston and Larry Felser here, it was a different world. Those guys wrote stories. They didn't write paragraphs that said, hey, here's what's going on, and that's it. I mean, they asked questions. They interviewed people. They went out and talked to different people. They got both sides of an issue. they fleshed out a whole story. It was long journalism, long view journalism, and it was fun, and it made those guys and a lot of people feel really comfortable and really good about what was going on in sports, or uncomfortable about what was going on in sports. They were the voice that really unified a lot of fans and what they thought about the game and people in it. And Peter King is one of those guys. That Monday Morning Quarterback thing is still the best long-form journalism that you can get on sports today, and I hope he continues it.
Love Larry Feltzer, worked with him for several years on the radio, and
I liked him
too.
Feel
like we were good friends. Did you ever deal with Will McDonough?
Oh yeah, Will McDonough a couple of times. No, I wasn't. He didn't. I think maybe one time he did something, but mostly my stuff was early in my broadcast professional. I talked to him shooting the breeze. Great.
He's remarkable.
He was an encyclopedia.
Yeah, I had a great conversation at a Super Bowl once, and it was a Super Bowl in Atlanta. It was the Rams and the. Who? Tennessee Titans? Maybe?
Rams and the Titans, yeah. Titans. In Atlanta. I don't know. Yeah, Atlanta.
Georgia, no. And Mr. Wilson had a party I went to Friday night before the Super Bowl. Will McDonough was there. He had just appeared on a PBS series about the Irish in America. It was like a long documentary.
Really?
And he talked about growing up as a poor Irish kid in Boston. Told incredible stories. And I went over with my wife, introduced my wife to Will. I'd known him a little bit. We talked at this party, Steve, for 2 hours about that series, about him growing up as a poor Irish kid in Boston. We never talked about football for the entire 2 hours. He was an amazing man.
They're storytellers.
Yeah.
And they understood. They had a great sense of self, and they helped other people get a sense of themselves.
Yeah.
And that was a gift. And it was – you're right. I mean, it was one of the few – because, you know, guys like you and me, we're storytellers. I mean, we sit here for 3 hours a day, and we talk to people, and it's one of the fun things we do. But for us – it's one of the few times you're not just easy to be quiet, you know, and listen to those.
Will,
when you get
or
a light.
Larry.
Yeah.
Or Peter King coming up next. Come
That's
on back
right.
to that. Peter King when we return. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports.
The update from One Bills Drive earlier today, day one of organized team activity for the Buffalo Bills, another voluntary part of the offseason program. Looks like good attendance. The entire team on the field at 11 a.m. today, lining up offense versus defense, some 7-on-7, some 9-on-7 work is allowed, 11-on-11 obviously, no contact. 3 OTAs this week, another one tomorrow. Total of 9 over the next 3 weeks. They work their way towards the mandatory minicamp in mid-June. Richie Incognito, released yesterday by the Buffalo Bills from the reserve retired list. He told the Bills he wanted to play again, according to ESPN. The 4-time Pro Bowl offensive lineman retired in April. Now he's a free agent, and Incognito can sign with any team that he wants to. Miami Dolphins quarterback Ryan Tannehill trying to complete his comeback from a season-ending knee injury that occurred last August. Tannehill expected to go with no limitations when the Dolphins kicked off their OTAs today. They've got a 3-day mandatory minicamp coming up in June as well. Jerry Richardson, the outgoing owner of the Carolina Panthers, expected to address his fellow owners today in the owners' meetings, the NFL Spring League meeting in Atlanta. Richardson expected to say farewell. 81 years old, has owned the Panthers for the entirety of the franchise existence. He announced in December he was selling after the league took over an investigation looking into allegations of workplace misconduct against Jerry Richardson. Stanley Cup hockey coming up. Game 7 now scheduled for Wednesday night, Washington and Tampa Bay. Series tied at 3 wins apiece. Last night, Washington beat Tampa Bay 3-0 to even up the series at 3 wins apiece. Lou Lamoriello, the architect of 3 Stanley Cup championships with the Devils, is going to take over as president of hockey operations for the New York Islanders. He is 75 years old. He was most recently the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Buffalo Bisons with a 5-game win streak, home again tonight. 6:05 game against the Syracuse Chiefs at the downtown ballpark. And NBA playoffs tonight, Golden State can take a stranglehold on their series against Houston. They lead it 2-1. They'll play at 9 o'clock tonight, Western Conference Finals at Golden State. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio. Going to make contact with Peter King shortly, get him on the air and talk about his future and his past, what he's done in the past. In the meantime, we want to hear from you. Who is going to be the MVP for the Buffalo Bills this season? I have a feeling, Steve, we're going to ask this question again probably someday in training camp because it is early.
Again, because there's going to – hopefully there'll be a lot of guys in contention for it because they'll be winning games. But Yeah, I mean, the training camp is going to – and what happens – well, I don't want to even get in, go down that road. What happens if somebody becomes ineligible, you know, Shady twists an ankle or yeah. something like that? Who knows?
But,
who
I mean, it's a question that our perception will change as we get through training camp, I would think. Anyway.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a guy we talked about a lot in the last couple of minutes or so, former senior writer at Sports Illustrated, the creator of MMQB, MondayMorningQuarterback.si.com, leaving Sports Illustrated but still going to write. He's covered the NFL for more than three decades. Happy to have our friend Peter King on the line. Peter, it's John Murphy and Steve Tasker in Buffalo. Thanks for joining us here today. We appreciate it.
No problem, man. How you doing?
Good. We were just talking about you in the last hour before we went to our break. About and a conversation about your decorated and long career. Steve and I were reminiscing about some of our favorites who covered the NFL for decades as well, including our own buddy Larry Felser, the late Larry Felser, and another great former football journalist, Will McDonough in Boston. We put you in that company, Peter, which I'm sure you find
wow.
pretty good.
That's really nice of you. You know, it's been really fortunate over the years. And I've covered the game now for 34 years. What's been really fortunate is that, you know, I've worked in some places that have been really good sort of training grounds to, you know, to be like a national guy. I started in Cincinnati. I watched more practices than I could count with standing next to Paul Brown on the sidelines at training camp and during the season in 1984. And I went to Newsday, and George Young and Bill Parcells were really good when I was covering the Giants. Acerbic quite often, but very good. And then, you know, in the NFL, to me, the right teams got good, you know, as I got there. You know, the Cowboys, Jerry Jones would open his house to you if you were writing about the Cowboys. Jimmy Johnson was great. The Bills were fantastic. Marv Levy was so incredibly educational. So many players on that team, including Steve, were really, really great to cover and great to deal with because they were open books. So that was really fortunate for me along the way.
Well, I can't tell you how many people we've spoken to on the radio about, you know, when we started talking to people and telling them you were going to be on with us today. We got calls telling them how much they enjoyed the Monday Morning Quarterback and all of that. And Murph and I have acknowledged that it's must reading for not just people who are fans, but really for us in the media, because you covered such a wide range of topics across sports and across the lines that it was fun to listen to. And it inspired me and a lot of us to think about other things outside our own little fan base and about some things we could talk to the people we had access to as well. So I think you are the most universally read at every level of sport than anybody I've ever known.
Wow. Well, I mean, that's really nice, Steve. I always felt like, you know, because I really liked the game so much, it was never work. I mean, it got to be work around 3 o'clock in the morning when I was nodding off on Sunday nights, but it was never really work. And all the time during the week, you hear so many things. If I had to put out something every day, you know, the last 5 years, I've just basically written most weeks Monday and Wednesday. But if I had to write something every day, it'd be really, really hard for me to devote as much time and thought, really, to that column on Monday. And so I've been lucky in that a lot of that stuff that I would just think about it, like I'd hear something on Thursday and I say, hey, I'm going to look into that for my stat of the week. Or I'd hear something on Wednesday and I would say, hey, let me call Bill Polian or whoever and make a note out of that. And so it just basically was being interested and curious, and that's really what that column is kind of all about. That I like when I go talk to college kids now, the one thing I say to them all the time is that you have to be curious. If you don't have a curiosity, you don't really have an interest in this game. If you wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning and five of your first 15 thoughts aren't about football, you know, you probably should either go cover something else or do something else.
Yeah.
I don't mean that in a snide way.
No.
I just mean that if you are really, really interested in it, and it, and no matter what time of day or night it is, you're thinking about it to some degree, then you're going to have a much better chance to have the sort of goulash-type column that that became.
Peter, I'm laughing because you make me think I have an ongoing dialogue with my wife. I will frequently wake up in the morning and pretty much lie there and stare at the wall for a while. My wife would say, what are you thinking about? And I always feel a little guilty. I'm thinking about the Bills. I'm thinking about football. But I do. It's crazy, yeah. But that's the way my day starts. It sounds like that's the way your day has started for decades.
It starts that. But I'll tell you, John, one of the things that – one of the reasons why – I mean, and there are several, but one of the reasons why I left – I'm in the process right now of leaving SI and the MMQB, which was a real gut-punch decision sort of because – I've loved it for so long, but I've just decided over the last couple of years, particularly, you know, I get to the draft and it gets to be a few days after the draft and you just want to take a big sigh and start watching baseball for a couple of months or doing whatever, watch American Idol. I don't care. Yeah. Just, you know, not focus every day on football. And yet, you know, at the MMQB, you know, we don't shut the lights out at the end of the draft. We keep writing about it. And so, in essence, what basically happened was that I just said, man, I could use those 8 or 10 weeks where you don't wake up every day thinking about, well, what are we going to write over the next 8 to 10 weeks? I just had had enough of that aspect about it. And I think if everybody just sort of shut the lights off on May 5th and turned them back on July 20th, who knows what would have happened, but I'm not sure I would have changed jobs.
Yeah, we're speaking with Peter King, former senior writer at Sports Illustrated and the founder of Monday Morning Quarterback, one of the most widely read sports articles in the NFL and around sports journalism. He's covered the NFL for 3 decades. Peter, I just want to ask you now, you signed a deal with NBC Sports. What's that entail? When and where can we find your content to get our fix of all of that? What's going to happen?
Well, I've agreed with them, and we haven't really sat down and done the nitty gritty of what exactly my column is going to be called, because they're going to keep MMQB, they're going to keep Monday Morning Quarterback at Sports Illustrated. So I'll rename the column and I'll start writing again. My first column at NBC will be July 16th, Monday, July 16th. And honestly, Steve, I'm sure the column is going to change some. Most years it changes some anyway, but I'll have some new and a few different things in the column. But in essence, what I hope to do and what I want to do is basically I want to keep writing this column. It's my favorite thing to do. So it'll be out there on the internet, pretty widely seen. They'll promote it on the Sunday Night Football pregame show and during the game, so people will know where it's going to be. And I'll tweet it out and put it out on Facebook and social media. But essentially, I'm not really going to change very much of my life. I'm just probably going to do a little bit less. And I'll be doing some features for the Sunday Night Football pregame show, which I've been doing for the last 2 years. And then I'll keep doing my podcast, and that'll basically be my life. So it'll be less, but the Monday column will still exist exactly the same as it always has.
Peter, Steve and I were talking about how one of the things that may account for your longevity in the business, your success in the business, has been your versatility. You do podcasts. You do television. You adapted quickly to the internet. It wasn't – you were a beat writer, obviously, and that's when I met you, when you're a beat writer at the Cincinnati Inquirer, but you expanded much beyond that. Do you find that to be the case?
Yeah, I've always – looked at the media and basically said, look, when I started in this, when I went to Ohio University in the late 70s, I wanted to be a writer. I didn't even think I'd be a sports writer. I just wanted to write for a newspaper. That was kind of my dream. And so I did it, And, you know, I became a sports writer early on in 1980. But I never really thought of the different media, basically, until I got to Sports Illustrated. And then I started seeing how much the world was changing. Will McDonough changed the world and made it possible for ugly guys to be on TV. And then beyond television, a lot of guys in our business started doing radio, which I like to do anyway. And so that became a big part of it. And then, you know, in 1997, my old pro football editor at SI was handed the reins to the CNNSI.com website. And I didn't even know what a website was at the time. And essentially, he just asked me to start doing this column. So I just figured, okay, and, you know, we'll see. And so I've always sort of felt, I mean, I got on Twitter, I think, 2 years after it was born. I've always sort of felt like we never know which one of these things is going to be the key to communicating with the next generation of people who love sports. So we better, you know, we better look at everything. We better see everything. We better sample everything. And we better be open to everything, because however people are going to get their news, I want to be involved. Podcasting now is one of those new genres, relatively new, and so that's been fun. I have to tell you, I listen to more podcasts now, like a lot of the, almost like the true crime podcasts. I love those. I love just, you know, listening, you know, being on an airplane, and I'd really rather listen to a well-done podcast than I would watch a movie on the plane. Mm. I don't know why, but I've really gotten into podcasts. So, you know, who knows? I don't know where the business is headed. I don't know who does, but I just try to be pretty conversant in as many different things as I can be.
Hey, Peter, your final column, your final MMQB column went up yesterday, in which you you threw a great big bouquet to my partner here, Steve Tasker. I think it's a compliment. You said the most – we've been talking about this. We can't – the most decent great player I've ever covered. Now – decent is obviously a compliment, but it's not the highest level of compliment.
Well, let me just tell you this, Pete. Before you
he's
answer
a decent
that,
guy. I call him decent.
I was going to joke and say you're the most decent great writer I've ever worked with.
You're decent. He's just decent. I think you nailed it, Peter. He's decent. He's okay.
What I really meant is that, you know how, you know, you walk through life and you meet different people and you form judgments on these people, and then the thought goes through your mind whenever you think of them. And my thought about Steve Tasker from the first time I ever met him was, you know, really a vastly underrated football player, A. B, treated everybody exactly the way you would want to be treated. And, I mean, it almost sounds like when you read it back, I'm damning him with faint praise.
Yeah, it does.
But to me, I think of, you know, if I call somebody the most decent guy I've met doing this job, that to me, I don't know. I've met a lot of really good people in this job. I've never met a guy who's better than Steve. And I don't say that just because, I mean, obviously I wrote it. I don't say that just because I'm on the radio with him right now. He just lives life the right way, and you know, people want to be around him.
Yeah,
you know, he's just a good human being, having nothing to do with football. So wow. You know, and that's one of the things I was talking about with being fortunate with all the people I've been around in football, all the really good communicators, all the such decent men, and obviously decent women too. But just the fact that I would always leave the Bills and I would say, so Tasker's one of those guys I just like to hang around with. He's a good human being.
Yeah, well, Murph was actually hoping it was faint praise.
No, because he can't really take you.
Right, and for me, I'm like, hey, where do I sign up, man? This is awesome. You can come on our show every day.
I made it my mission to cut him down to size, Peter. No, that's great praise.
So, enough about me and enough about you.
What do you think of me?
What do you think of? No, let's the owners' meetings are going on, and I know you've got some interest, and you've covered a ton of these. I don't even know. Are you in Atlanta these days? Are you going to?
No, I'm not. Okay, no, we got two people in Atlanta. And
right.
I'm not there.
I mean, there's a couple of things that I think are massive on this agenda. One is the gambling thing, and two is the kickoff thing. Now, you and I spoke this morning about the kickoff thing. And you've been working on a story about what it's going to mean, and it's really hard to, you know, tell the future. But what are your thoughts on either one of those? You can take them one at a time, either the gambling issue or the kickoff issue. You can pick.
Gambling, to me, was going to happen at some point. That's always, in my opinion, always been a question of when. You know, if you're going to allow people in the United States to smoke cigarettes, if you're going to allow them to drink alcohol, if you're going to allow them to own firearms, it seems fairly silly to not say that, well, you can gamble on sporting events in Nevada, but not in any of the other 49 states. I mean, that seems ridiculous. You know, sports gambling has existed for a long time in a very small area of our country, and civilization has not folded. Leagues will figure it out. Teams will figure it out. In my opinion, it's going to be a big deal, but honestly, I'm surprised it took till 2018 to happen.
I think you got to tip your hat to the NFL for making it almost thrust upon them before they even took part in it.
Well, yeah, I mean, they... Look, I think the NFL, I think this comes at a time when the NFL, I believe, if all things were equal, and the owners won't admit this, but the NFL has got to be thrilled that this is happening, no matter what they have always said about being uneasy with gambling. But there's so many issues now. I almost think that, first of all, they'll have to ban players and coaches and team officials and anybody who works for a team. They'll have to ban everybody from gambling on pro football games. That's number one. But so how will you actually control that? You know, if John Doe of the Philadelphia Eagles is sitting at home on a Tuesday night and he goes, man, we're going to kill the Bills this week, and I know it. What's to prevent John Doe from telling his best friend or his college roommate, dude, you know, we're going to kill the Bills. I don't care what the line says. We're going to kill them. So that's the kind of stuff that the NFL is going to have to figure out. What are we going to do about inside information? It's almost like, you know, Adam Schefter, Ian Rappaport, Jay Glazer. Those guys now, the daily information guys telling you who's hurt, who might play, who's going to be affected by injury, those guys are going to be totally invaluable. There's all sorts of little things about this that I'm not sure at the end of the day what it's all going to mean, but I doubt that it'll ruin football, and I'm sure that owners are going to like it because it's going to cause them to make more money.
Hey, Peter, here's an issue which I'm not sure is on the formal owners' meeting agenda, but what can they do? What's the path to get through the Colin Kaepernick, Eric Reed situation and the pregame protests? I don't like when I hear them people speculate that maybe they'll let teams decide on a team-by-team basis what to do.
I think if they let teams decide, it's going to be a disaster.
I do, too.
Myself. Because, you know, how can the Buffalo Bills – or say the Buffalo Bills go and play the Dallas Cowboys. Well, Jerry Jones is forcing his players because he's basically said, if you're a Dallas Cowboy, you'll stand for the anthem or whatever. Implicit, you know, it's clearly implicit. If you play for the Cowboys, you're going to stand for the anthem. And what if the Bills decide they got five guys who are not going to stand for the anthem, so they're going to be in the locker room before the game, and then all of a sudden it becomes an issue. And look, I don't think it should be an issue. I think the easiest thing for this, even though it's really unsatisfactory to me, is that if a guy does not want to stand for the anthem, then just tell him, look, you stay in the locker room before the game, and as soon as it's done, you come out and play football. That, to me, even though I don't like that because it takes away the rights of players who would want to do something different during the anthem. I think that's probably the best thing to do, the best way to do it. It's funny. I was at a Mets. I live in New York, and I was at a Mets game last year. And so the anthem comes. We all stand, and I look over, and there is quite literally there's a family, like in our same section, but maybe about six or eight rows down, sitting for the anthem. Nobody said anything to them. It was clearly by design. It was four people. Maybe it wasn't a family, but it was four people at a game together, and they just sat there for the anthem. So, you know, life goes on, people may not like that. And maybe there were people at that game who saw that who it burned them or something. But I just – we're not going to reach full agreement on that. And the Kaepernick-Eric Reid thing, look, in my opinion, I find it ridiculous that somebody who's doing something to raise social awareness of something and does do a protest like this, I just find it ridiculous that they're not able to play football. And I really think that the NFL should not be as concerned as they are about the image of a game. And, of course, they're going to be concerned about the image of a game. But I think that the human rights of these guys, whatever is decided during the anthem, and I understand why people are very upset inside the league about Kaepernick because he's gone so far and he's suing them and all that. But I don't think that we should take away somebody's right to earn a living because they're protesting. And it's probably a longer subject than for this show, but I just think it's a little bit of a stain on America when you take away somebody's rights to express their opinion about something.
Hey, Peter, you're get going with NBC in mid-July, right when training camp opens, and it says that you're going to resume your training camp tour. When that happens, you're going to make a visit up to Pittsburgh, New York, St. John Fisher, summertime home of the Bills?
I will absolutely be there.
Oh, excellent.
Because the greatest place on the NFL training camp tour by far is the Pittsburgh Dairy Barn. And they have, there's something there, the black raspberry milkshake, that I don't care if I even go and see the Bills practice. I must have a black raspberry milkshake, and I will have. I may have two, in fact.
We hope
but
to see you there.
I'll definitely see you guys there. I love being there. It's classic Americana, great training camp environment, and I love showing up, and I love seeing it.
All right, Pete.
Thanks for this, Peter. Great talking with you. Congratulations on the move, and we look forward to seeing you in Pittsburgh this summer. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Peter King, who is leaving Sports Illustrated and MMQB, on his way to NBC Sports, where he'll write a weekly Monday morning NFL column for NBCSports.com. He'll be on NBC Sports Network, on the radio, contribute to Football Night in America, and going to training camp, going to Pittsburgh. Peter joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. A lot to discuss there. We'll come back and do it when we return. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Steve Tasker on Buffalo Bills Radio. It is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. I'm John Murphy. Steve Tasker is here. We just got off the phone with Peter King. We couldn't get him off the phone. Steve, he loved talking about his career and the stuff he did at Monday Morning Quarterback.
It wasn't just about himself, though. He talked about the league and all the stuff that's
but
happened
I think
in the
he
media
liked,
business.
I really got the sense he loved a chance to reflect on what he has done in his career. And he started about, you know, going to college at Ohio University. He just wanted to be a reporter.
Well, how about standing on the sidelines and watching countless Bengals practice, standing next to Paul Brown?
That would get you hooked.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, and you're new to this job, right, a month?
Right.
But I do, every day in the morning, we'll sit there and stare at a wall when I wake up, 5 minutes after I wake up, and think about what's coming up on the show, what are we going to talk about, what's going on in the league.
Yeah,
I do. You can't get away from it when you do a daily show like
that. But you're so – we come in and you read everything about everything if you can, you know, and that's basically what I do when I get ready for for an NFL game with CBS, you kind of you read all the articles that come out generated just by that game, which are a ton, until you get halfway through the season. Then you've already read all those articles, and you got to now you're looking for new stuff to read. But you think about it constantly, and you have opinions, and people like Peter King formulate a lot of opinions in, of other guys in the media business, like you and me. He's right, talking about the NFL, and he goes, it was inevitable. At some point, gambling was going to be a bigger presence, and it did make a difference that the NFL was kind of had their hand forced into them, and they're probably relieved and happy they did, because now they don't have to worry about it looking like they're money grubbers, even though they're going to
make
a ton of money off this.
Yes.
It wasn't by their design. Somebody else, you know, dropped it into their lap, so they're going to take advantage of it, and I think that's a plus for them.
The other thing, one more thing about Peter King and his approach to his career. Can I bring this up? It was a quote, and our guys got it here, on his time covering the NFL, quote, "You have to be curious. If you don't have a curiosity, you don't have interest in this game." And he said he says that to students a lot. I find myself saying that to students that I would speak to or groups that I speak to. Sometimes people like the NFL, but they're not curious about how it works, what makes it tick. And I've always – I'm not comparing myself to Peter King, but I've always had a compulsion almost to go behind the scenes like, wait a minute, why did they do that? What were they thinking? What was the quarterback thinking when he threw that pass? What was the offensive lineman trying to do there? You know what I mean? And yep. That has kind of driven me for decades, and it sounds like Peter King has that same curiosity. I don't want to get behind the scenes because I want to rub elbows with celebs. That doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is, what were you thinking? What were you doing? What were you trying to do? Those are the questions
It's interesting
ask.
Because so many times in the NFL, particularly when you talk about a team or a coach's decision or what happened in the offseason or why they drafted this guy over that guy – it affects a whole fan base. And to have an effect on so many people, even if it's for something as innocuous as the NFL, I mean, you know, people care about it, and they watch it, and they go see the games and stuff. But, you know, for most of them, you know, unless they're gambling or something, it doesn't really affect their day-to-day life except their mood. But it does have some sort of effect on them. They're happy or sad.
Yeah.
And to see that many thousands of people scattered across the country and across the planet to be affected by it, you want to go find out what went into the decision, and to find out why they liked Josh Allen more than they liked Josh Rosen or Sam Darnold or Baker Mayfield or Lamar Jackson or any of the other guys that were actually available there. Why was he the guy, and what was the conversation about, and who had a voice in the room? And it's fun too, because you get into the fact that when it all boils down to it, it's just one guy's opinion. He's saying, "I liked him better."
Yeah.
And that's the fun part. When you get finally down to the person who had the final say, he said, "I thought for this reason, this is why we made the pick." It's a lot of fun to dissect it like that.
Let me make one more point about Peter King and his career and his approach to his career. Am I boring you with this?
No, because I'll add on to it.
Okay. And it came about when I read his column yesterday, his final MMQB, the one where you get mentioned as the most decent human of all time. But the thing was, and when he reviews and he was thanking people, but you know what? It struck me then. Just as when we talked about Larry Felser and Will McDonough, two great writers in pro football history, what motivates them are stories about people. Peter King went through it was a long columnist. He probably named 25, 30, 40 people, including you, and all of his stories are about people. That's, I think, what drives good reporting, not, you know, stats or trends or what did they punt on fourth down or not. It's about the people who make those decisions, the people who play the game, the people who work so hard to get to the NFL. That's what I think people want to read about, and that's why guys like Peter King and Felser and McDonough and all the great writers are successful, because they tell stories about people.
And when we had Peter on just a few minutes ago and we listened to him speak, and he had so much to say, and it was really cool to listen to, you get the idea that – and it's a wrong idea for me. He was a great writer. And that's why he was so successful at what he did. And it's more than that. He was a guy who it took – he was a great writer. He was trustworthy. He was curious, as he said. And he found out a lot of things. And when guys read his stuff, it impressed them. They liked the stuff he wrote, guys who played like me back in the day when we first started hearing about Peter King. And we'd see him in, we'd speak to him, we'd read his stuff, and he became – a guy that was trustworthy inside the locker room, a guy who wrote things that even if they were unflattering, they were, you know, accurate. And he gained a reputation as being a writer who had integrity, who didn't fit a story into his agenda, who wrote, you know, basically, for lack of a better term, and it's all encompassing, he wrote the truth, and good, bad, or indifferent. And it, Peter King hasn't been as successful as he has just because he was a good writer. He was as successful as he has because people admired him as a human being. They admired the way he did his job. They admired the integrity. And that's why when Peter King, to this very day, makes a call to a general manager of a team or an owner or even an owner or anybody in the league or any – they pick up the phone. Yeah. They call him. They call him back. I returned his call this morning. You know, I mean, he has access because of the kind of person he – it's not because he's a great writer. It's because of the kind of person he is. And that's – and he got a sense of that when he was on with us on the radio just in the last half hour.
We wish him well. He's not retiring. He's not dying. He is moving over to NBC Sports, Peter King. We enjoyed talking with him, just as we're going to enjoy talking to our next guest who joins us just off the field after the Bills workout today, the OTA, and a little bit of weightlifting to follow that. Happy to have veteran Jerry Hughes, defensive end Jerry Hughes, in studio with us, getting set for your ninth year in the league. Jerry, good afternoon. Thanks for coming by. We appreciate it.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. Glad to be on.
How's it going, man? Yeah. Big day. First day OTAs. One. Yeah. We were noticing, too, man, what a difference a day makes. I mean, like, one day you guys are hopping around through cones, and, you know, and then the next day you got helmets on, you're sprinting around the field playing football.
Oh, yeah. It was a lot of fun, you know, being able to kind of strap everything on, everything that we've been doing in the classroom, actually finally putting that on the field and moving with a pretty good pace for day one. I mean, just really knocking off some of that rust for a lot of us, you know, getting used to the calls with our new middle linebacker, you know, trying to really get him settled in, get him acclimated to the whole team and how we do things here.
How's that going? What's Tremaine Edmonds look like to you?
Oh, fantastic. I mean, he takes command of the huddle. He doesn't really have the deer in the headlights look where, you know, this is really too much or overwhelming. You can kind of see him really at ease out there, kind of just taking that leadership role in stride.
Can you tell he's just 20?
No. No, I mean, the kid's huge. I mean, he's out there commanding the huddle. He's getting a set, you know. He's communicating with not only the front but the guys in the back as well. You know, for someone so young, I knew he was 19, 20 years old, but, you know, he doesn't really show his age. I mean, I catch him in the breakfast hall. You know, he has his note cards. He's going over plays. I mean, he's a real true pro, and you love to see that with a young guy coming in.
That's a lot to ask a young guy, any young guy, even if he's 21, 22, never played in the league. Does he have the full defensive playbook yet, or are they kind of, you know, breaking it in slowly for him?
Oh, breaking it in slowly. You definitely don't want to overwhelm those guys. You know, right now they're still getting used to the city, where to live, you know, worrying about their personal life as well as being here. So, I mean, we certainly don't want to just overwhelm them just yet, but it's great to see him, you know, taking that extra step of, you know, making sure he can get things down in his memory so that way we can go out on the field and move fast.
One of the things about it, too, is he doesn't have a full playbook. But nobody really does now except for you guys have already been one lap. Now you're starting to build on what you did last year. We've had a couple of guys in. They all said, wow, what a difference a year makes. We're all the veteran guys in second year in the defense. Yeah. This is going to be a much different year for you guys, right?
Absolutely. I mean, for us, it allows us to go back and actually review some of the past game film, see where the areas that we can certainly improve the most in. And then now it's just when you hear a call or you hear the linebackers make a check, it's just like second nature. It's not too much thinking. It's just more so, okay, now I know what I can do. Now I know where I can move within the scheme and still be able to kind of make plays and not be wrong.
Jerry Hughes, our guest, Bills defensive end. A couple of minutes left with him. All of a sudden, you look around and there's some other TCU players here, right? Jeremy Curley and Newhouse and a rookie defensive end I want to ask you about. I don't know much about him. Matt Boson, is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
What do you think of him? What do you see from him?
Oh, man. Very explosive, kind of just like he was at TCU. I remember when I would go back to school, I was able to catch him during his spring ball and just whatever games I could see on TV as we were traveling around on Saturdays. I mean, he still has a great first step getting off the ball and then just falling into his pass rush moves. It's just very second nature, and it's just good to hear. Good to see him here, but not only that, but some of the things that I kind of talked to him about, he's still kind of bringing that up here to the league and things like that, which is really cool.
You played with Newhouse, right, at TCU?
Yeah, same year. Same recruiting class,
Wow. What's it? Horned Frogs, right?
Yeah, Horned Frogs.
So you guys crossed. Now, he's bounced around a little bit. So you guys kind of hooked back up, and so you guys are like, hey.
Oh, yeah, no, it was certainly cool. I mean, Curley came in a year after, and he really set our offensive fire with the wild frog because he was a pretty talented kid. Kid played baseball coming out, could throw the ball 95, 96 miles an hour. So he's a very talented guy as well. But, no, it was great to see Newhouse again. I always see him back in Fort Worth or Austin, wherever he's hanging out at. We always kind of connect and things like that.
He's an interesting guy. He's an intelligent guy. Yeah. We had him on the show a couple of times. He's just got a wide variety of interests. And
stuff. Oh, yeah. He's a very smart guy. He's always been like that. When we came in, we actually came in together, and just to see how he maneuvered and did his things throughout school, I mean, he was able to get off campus his freshman year. He wasn't worried about study hall hours or things like that. I mean, he knew how to come in and take care of business. And so, yeah, it's certainly cool.
So you got Jeremy Curley,
yeah,
Marshall Newhouse, and this kid, Matt Boson,
yeah,
and Jerry, all you guys, TCU Horned Frogs,
yep,
kind of converged back up here in Buffalo. Now, Matt Boson is a guy who came after you guys. Although you said you saw him when he was in college because you went back and stuff, but all the three of you, Curley, Newhouse, and you played together.
Yeah, we did. We had a lot of fun playing together. Curley was a part of the whole Rose Bowl team and things like that, so it was great to kind of see those guys pick up where we left off and have some more success. But, yeah, no, it's certainly cool just to see all the guys back.
And as this OTAs kind of gets rolling now, day one of now some football playing, yeah. Murph mentioned it. There's a lot of new faces on the front seven. You guys, you struggled to get pressure on the passer last year. Mm-hmm. You got some guys in now, a lot of new faces. What are your goals? I mean, as a team, I obviously want to be, you know, a good defense, but what are what do you guys talk about as how good this defense can be, particularly since you got a lot of guys that are in their second year in the scheme?
For us, it's always been about hosting that Super Bowl trophy. So, I mean, we all understand that. Everybody understands that when you come into this building, it's all about winning the day. What can we do to get better? We really focus hard on that. Take that to the next step with us being, you know, the second year in this defensive scheme, being able to really go over our problem areas, being able to see that on film, see how we can improve as far as pass rush technique, run stop ability, you know, and then really just hone in on that. And then we get in the weight room and all improving on those areas as well. You know, everybody has a weakness that you gotta work on. And so it's just great to see all the guys come back for the whole OTA. It's been here for the whole football school, really putting in that extra work.
You've been back here for a month or so, but I wonder, especially with your young family, what you did for fun during the off season when you were away from Buffalo.
Man, it was really cool. I enrolled my son into some swim classes, so he was able to kind of pick up on that.
Is he 2 years old?
He's two now, yeah. Wow. So he's really loving that right now. We went to Coronado, which was really fun out there in San Diego. Really,
oh, yeah. The
beautiful
island.
Place. Yeah. We got to see a lot of the Navy SEALs out there doing some training, which he got a kick out of watching the helicopters and planes fly by.
It's all day out there in Coronado.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we probably sat out there on the beach for at least 5 hours just watching those guys train and do things. Yeah, it was very nice, really fun just to kind of spend time with them, my daughter and my wife, and just kind of relax and just unwind.
And that's totally underrated. I mean, when the season's over, particularly when, you know, you win an extra week, got to the playoffs, and you finally get a chance to take a deep breath, man, it feels so good to relax and get away. And a lot of guys, you know, some guys compete or train a little bit. Almost everybody takes a little bit of time where you just want to sit down and just take a deep breath.
Oh, yeah, you have to. I mean, our seasons are so long. We beat our bodies up. I, myself, had a couple bumps and bruises that just needed to heal. And what better way to do it than just with family on the beach.
Looked like work today, though, and I know there's a lot more work to come. Jerry, thanks for stopping by. We appreciate you making us a part of your long day today.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Appreciate it. Jerry Hughes, Bills defensive end, joining us in studio. We'll break. We're back with more. It is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. What Have We Learned is presented by Advance Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Peter King, leaving MMQB, leading Sports Illustrated, to go to NBC Sports, joined us a little bit earlier this hour and talked about his three decades writing about the National Football League.
You have to be curious. If you don't have a curiosity, you don't really have an interest in this game. If you wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning and five of your first 15 thoughts aren't about football, you know,
You probably should either go cover something else or do something else. Yeah. I don't mean that in a snide way. No. I just mean that if you are really, really interested in it, and no matter what time of day or night it is, you're thinking about it to some degree, then you're going to have a much better chance to have the sort of goulash type column that became.
So, Steve, I always thought there was something wrong with me because I do have those football thoughts, Bills thoughts, first thing in the morning.
Murph, you are completely normal.
Probably.
I hope you are, because that's what I do, too.
Thanks to our production assistants, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, Kevin Cargis, and James Roble, our producer, Jay Harris. Back tomorrow at 12 noon with another installment of One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. We come to you from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.